Y'all did that Biebervention camera. Justin, Stone Cold Steve Austin coming to you from the Arsenio Hall. Straighten your act up, or I'm going to come find you and put my size 13 foot up your ass. Ah!
The Solid Monster sounds off.
Hulk Hogan has definitely been that rocket fuel that TNA needed.
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
He's fat. You haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
Welcome to episode 312 and 313 and 314. I think we have enough to fill up three episodes. Now it is episode 312, Super Bowl Sunday, February 2nd, 2014. I am the Solemn Monster. This week's Sound Off is brought to you by Audible.com. Many of you, I know, have signed up for the free 30-day Audible trial and have gotten your free audio book, so I thank you for that. If you are going to sign up, please do so at audibletrial.com/solemnmonster. That way you can help out the show and get a free audio book and try out the service, which I think you'll enjoy. They've got tens of thousands of audiobooks. If you like wrestling books, they have that. If you're into mystery novels, if you're into autobiographies, science fiction, whatever floats your boat, check out the selection they have up there on Audible because it's pretty extensive. And like I said, if you sign up at the link, if you go and browse and then ultimately you sign up for the trial, if you do it at audibletrial.com/solemnmonster, you are helping out this podcast, which if you're listening to the show, I'm not sure why you wouldn't want to help us out. So head over to that link, check it out. I'm really pleased to see all the people who have signed up so far, and if you are not among them, you have nothing to lose. Again, you get a free 30 days to try out the service, a free audiobook, audibletrial.com/solemnmonster. We also have a number of PayPal shout-outs to dole out this week to people who have contributed. Of course, you can go to thesolemnmonster.com. There is a donation box there if you want to give back to the show, whatever you can. Glenn Warnicky, Thomas Surge, Lazar Groove, Andrew Aspie, Mitchell Montgomery, Javier DeLone, and Brandon Garrell. Thank you to everybody who contributed to the Sound Off via PayPal this past week. We begin with our top story this week, CM Punk's walkout, and what I'm calling the rise of the fan revolution, which is not always a good thing, but is also not exactly a bad thing. But I think what we're seeing here over these last couple of weeks and what I think we're going to see going forward is a greater influence being exerted by crowds across the country. I don't think this phenomenon is going to be going away anytime soon. It's just something that WWE is going to have to deal with. And these people were out in full force this past week. But we'll start with Punk. You all know the basic gist of what happened based on all the emails that I've gotten over the past week asking me about it. Punk showed up at Raw last Monday night. The night after the Rumble, he met with Vince McMahon only about an hour or two before the show, and he told him, that's it, I'm going home. And he left, and he boarded a flight back to Chicago, and has not been heard from since. And so here we are with CM Punk only, you know, what, 2 months? Is it 2 months? About 2 months away from WrestleMania now. Seemingly gone from the company and out of the picture. He still has several months left on his contract. Nobody knows exactly what's going to happen. I've been getting message after message after message about, is this a work? Or telling me, flat out, this is a work. Don't be gullible. All of these different things. Punk was at the Wizard World Convention in Portland last Friday, a couple days before the Royal Rumble. He did a Q&A. Hindsight being what it is, you know, you watch the highlights that are up on YouTube, and all the signs were there of his unhappiness. You know, he said this is Daniel Bryan's year. He'd like to see him get the main event spot at WrestleMania, which was interesting given that Punk, you know, Punk's one lone goal, he's talked about this before in wrestling, is to headline a WrestleMania, and even he realizes that Bryan should have gotten that opportunity this year, and maybe he still will. But you watch the video, and Punk just seems overall disinterested in wrestling right now. You know, he said he shows up, they tell him what to do, he does it, and he leaves. Hardly the rebel character that he was portraying back in 2011. It's almost like the system has beaten him down. He talked about not really taking a break over the last 10 years. His body's beaten up. You know, the dude's burned out. And it has nothing to do with Batista winning the Royal Rumble. He's very friendly with Dave. And he even said in the Q&A, it's different from The Rock. And at least that, you know, Batista signed a long-term contract. He is back full-time for 2 years, supposedly. And you know, I get where Punk is coming from, but I heard that and I rolled my eyes. I know I talked about this on the Sound Off at the time when reports were leaking out from people in the company and other wrestlers about how unhappy the wrestlers were that The Rock was coming back to take a spot away from them. Not realizing, of course, that Rock was going to do monster business for them, which he did, and that they would all benefit from that. So I don't know why Punk is still crying about that. Those two WrestleManias with Rock in the main event did bigger business than any other WrestleMania shows ever. And there's nobody they could bring back and put in that spot, short of Steve Austin in the main event, maybe, who could do the kind of business for them. You know, and even Austin, he's not nearly as big of a star as Rock is now. He's been out of the spotlight for over a decade. So Rock was the one guy. If you could bring him back to work your biggest show of the year, you're a fool not to jump all over that. I don't think Batista's going to mean nearly as much in that spot. But to kill that rumor, it wasn't Batista. He's not the reason for Punk's discontent. It's been reported that one of the main points of frustration for Punk right now was being programmed with Triple H at WrestleMania. That was the rumored match. That was one of the top two or three matches scheduled for WrestleMania this year. And I guess, you know, Punk's not buying what they're selling. He doesn't see that as being the kind of match that he wants to be in at WrestleMania. And I'm sure that won't make Triple H very fond of Punk, which can make things interesting when and if he ever comes back. And I'm almost sure he'll be back, you know, whether it takes 6 months or a year, 2 years, whatever. I mean, you can never say for sure, because look at Jeff Hardy. He was the number two babyface in the company at one point. Big, big star, making a ton of money, and he left on his own. Now, granted, he had the drug bust after that, but it's going to be 5 years, if you can believe it, and he's still with TNA. Jeff Hardy's a free spirit, does what he wants, so is Punk. It's not so much about the money with Punk, because walking out right before your biggest payoff of the year at WrestleMania is a pretty strong case, I think, made there that there are more important things to the guy than money. He doesn't seem to live a lavish lifestyle. I saw that interview he did from his kitchen with Ariel Helwani. He's got himself a nice apartment, but it's not like he lives in a fortress like John Cena does. And, you know, there's other rumors out there that in terms of the money, he was upset because he didn't feel he was properly compensated for certain events in the past. And one other point he brought up in that Ariel Helwani interview, and this is not just, you know, dirt sheet rumor BS, he said this flat out on camera, is that he doesn't know how this new network, which is now launching in less than a month, is going to affect WrestleMania payoffs and payoffs for future pay-per-views. Because a lot of the wrestlers, especially the ones like, you know, Punk in his position, even though he's been demoted of late from where he had been, let's say, a year ago when he still had that title run going, and he was headlining the Rumble against The Rock, and he headlined Elimination Chamber against The Rock. He had the match with The Undertaker at Mania. So he was involved in some pretty high-profile pay-per-view matches. I'm sure his pay-per-view payoffs were quite nice. Probably a lot more than somebody like a Kofi Kingston would get. But nobody knows how the launch of the network is going to affect payoffs at Mania and elsewhere for the wrestlers. Punk is among them, and apparently that was a point of contention with him, to the point where he actually brought it up in that interview with Ariel Helwani when he asked him, oh, what do you think about the new network? You know, as a wrestling fan, this has got to be like a dream. And Punk said, yeah, I wish something like this was around in 1997, but, and then he, you know, he went into the whole payoff issue. So that's part of it. You know, and then there's other rumors that he was unhappy realizing he was never going to be the top, top guy. As long as John Cena's in that spot, it's always going to be Cena. Brian, of course, has had this groundswell of support in recent months. And one of the reasons Punk wanted to turn heel when he did last year was so that he can be the number one guy, at least on the heel side. You know, and I think, think back to when Edge was the number one guy on SmackDown many, many years ago. Edge carried that brand. That was a position that Edge embraced. You know, Edge didn't want to be on Raw and get lost in the shuffle and play second and third fiddle to John Cena and Triple H. At least then, he was able to get away from those guys. He was able to get more television time and be the top guy on a brand. And there is no brand split anymore. There has not been a brand split for many years. You have one WWE. The storylines overlap now on Raw and SmackDown. And he realizes that he's just not going to be that top guy. So it's a combination of all of these different things that have led us to the point that we are at right now. And my view is this. If the guy is burned out, I get it. You know, it's a hard lifestyle. What makes this different than Steve Austin walking out on the company in 2002? Because I got a ton of emails asking me if the two situations are identical. How do they compare? You know, they compare a little bit, but, you know, it's a yes and no. There's no straight answer to that question. Are they identical situations? No, but they have a lot of similarities. Austin was not happy with the plans they had for him creatively. They were going to give away the first match between Steve Austin and Brock Lesnar for free on Raw as a King of the Ring qualifier with Brock going over. And Austin looked at that and said, fuck that. That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. I don't have a problem losing to Brock, but now's not the time to do it. You build up a match like that for pay-per-view. And he's right. But he was still wrong to walk out the way that he did. And today, Austin acknowledges that. He says it was the biggest regret that he has, walking out on the company back then the way he did. There's a right way and a wrong way to handle things, and he handled it the wrong way. He admits that. Because when you do something like that, you know, even if you feel you're right for doing it, it affects everybody else in the company. It's a selfish thing to do. With Punk, this has been building for a while now. Okay, this was not one day, I don't like the creative plans for TV tonight. Or, you know, one day, oh, I think I'll go home today. The signs have been there for a while. Sounds like there was a really good chance he wasn't going to re-sign when his contract expires in July. But the thing is, he's got, what, five or six months left on his deal? You signed the contract. A very lucrative contract, I'm sure. Honor your deal. Don't walk away and leave everybody else in a lurch. And I'm not even talking about, oh, he let the fans down. You know, the only fans that Punk let down are the fans who paid money to see him at the live events coming up in the upcoming weeks, and for the people who paid to see him at the Access signings WrestleMania weekend, which I'll get to in a second. In terms of letting down the fans, those are the only fans that he actually let down. All these other fans, the big CM Punk, oh, he let the fans down. He let the fans down? Did you specifically pay money for a ticket to see him in the next month or two? Because if not, I don't see how this affects you. This affects the people who work in WWE. Especially heading into WrestleMania. They have plans in place. This guy's going to wrestle that guy. All of a sudden, one of your top stars walks out, and now everything has to be reshuffled. And maybe that's a good thing. Maybe in the end it actually works out to everybody's benefit. Maybe we get a stronger WrestleMania card because of it. But this affects a lot of different people. Not just himself, and not just Triple H. You know, and maybe he's right. Maybe they could do better than Punk versus Triple H. Maybe he figured he was losing the match. That'd be pretty stupid if he was going to lose, but who knows? It could be any of those things. But it's disrespectful to walk out an hour or a couple of hours before the show. Now, some people are still skeptical. They think it has to be a work. It's not a work. Not everything is a work. Some people still insist that Montreal was this elaborate work. Probably the same people who claim to see Bigfoot or little green Martians stealing socks off people's feet. Let's see how many of you get that reference. Elvis and Tupac are not off somewhere making a duet. Okay, WWE went ahead, they pulled Punk from all of the Access signings WrestleMania weekend, and they replaced him with Ric Flair. They're not going to piss off people who already paid to see Punk, and possibly, not even possibly, they're offering to refund people's money. People are getting refunds issued because when they paid for their tickets a week ago, whenever Access tickets went on sale, they were expecting, and they paid good money because I think a basic Access ticket is like $40 or $45. Those VIP signing tickets are a lot more. They may be more than double. So there are people that paid really good money to specifically see CM Punk, take a picture with him, get his autograph, and now WWE has to refund people's money. I mean, what, as part of some elaborate angle? If they paid that much attention to detail, I'd have nothing to talk about anymore. It'd be great. But they don't. And so if Punk did bail on them and did so only a little while before the show last Monday, that's not cool. You've got to honor your commitments. Chris Jericho wasn't happy with his position in WCW. He decided he was leaving. He was going to WWE. He still had a few months left on his contract. He knew he was going to get jobbed out by Bischoff on his way out. Should he have just said, well, you know, in March and April, screw you, I'm going home? I'm sure WCW would have claimed breach of contract and it would have turned into a whole big legal mess. But no, he gutted it out until the end of his deal and he made the jump. When Brock Lesnar decided, I hate travel, I hate people, I'm beat up, I don't want to do this anymore, did he hop on the next flight back to Minnesota? No. He finished his contract out. He did the job to Goldberg at WrestleMania. I'm sure he didn't like it, but he did it. He made the commitment. And he was factored into some big plans they had for WrestleMania. He didn't just go home. I'm sure if they wanted to, they could take Punk to court for breach of contract. You know, they're not going to do that. Not if they have any hope of getting him back at some point. I don't think they want to burn that bridge. You know, I mean, look, he could very well come back before WrestleMania. I'm sure they're going to try. I don't know if Punk would want to listen, but of course they're going to try to get him back as soon as possible. I'm sure they would love to have him back by the time Raw comes to Chicago on March 3rd. Maybe he'll come to his senses. They just had an NXT taping on Thursday with fans hijacking all the shows that night with chants of CM Punk. Security confiscated a whole bunch of Punk signs. It's going to be very interesting to see on Raw this week and in the weeks to come what the reaction is like from the crowds at the arenas. You know, maybe those Daniel Bryan chants start to get drowned out by chants of CM Punk. I'm not too worried about Bryan. He's, believe me, people will still cheer their heads off for the guy. He'll be fine. If Punk's not back with them by that Raw on March 3rd, you know, that's going to be a fun night, okay? We're going to have a hijacking that, like, we've never seen before. And I can almost have sympathy with WWE in that case. I have no sympathy for them when it comes to Bryan. They get what they deserve. But when it comes to Punk, believe me, they didn't want him to leave. This was his decision. So I think in that case, it might be fun for us to watch on TV, and it might be fun for the fans in the building that night, but I would have a little bit of sympathy for WWE because this was not, you could say that they helped contribute to the situation. Maybe they helped even cause it, but the guy walked out. Nobody forced him to do that. That was his decision. If the people there are pissed off that they expected Punk when they bought their Raw tickets and Punk's not there, blame Punk. Don't blame Vince McMahon. And the belief now is that Daniel Bryan will be slotted in most likely against Triple H, taking Punk's place at WrestleMania, which would mean the rumored match with Sheamus is off, thankfully. I think that's an improvement from what they had planned for him before. But if you're Sheamus, this goes back to what I said before about walking out and how that affects other people, you're probably not too happy about that. I still think they're making a mistake if they don't put the belt on Bryan at WrestleMania. You know, Extreme Rules is in Seattle, so I guess you could do it there. After that giant reaction he got last month on Raw, I'm sure he'll get a hero's welcome. But to delay this thing even more, I don't know. You know, maybe the Chamber. Maybe the Elimination Chamber is the place to do it. We already know Bryan is in the match. So even though there's five other guys, Bryan is getting his title shot at the pay-per-view later this month. Maybe have it come down to Bryan and Orton, or even Bryan and Cena. I'm sure the place would come unglued. You don't want it to be like the Chamber match from SummerSlam, where Goldberg was super over in that match. That was the night to put the world title on him. They didn't do it. And then when he finally won it a month later, it just wasn't the same. But for WrestleMania, a match with Triple H at least makes sense for the story they started last summer. And it's a better match than Sheamus in that you know there ain't no Triple H match that's going to be opening the show at WrestleMania. You at least know that much, okay? Whereas before, if it was going to be Bryan and Sheamus, I absolutely would have seen or would have expected to see them open the show. And that's just not the position you want to put a guy like Bryan in. Forget whether you think he deserves to open the show or end the show or whatever. Can you imagine if they put Daniel Bryan in the opening match of WrestleMania? How that crowd would just crap all over the rest of the card, except maybe Undertaker's match, because I think they have enough respect for him not to do that. So maybe they should. If it's going to be Bryan and Triple H, they've been building this up since the summer, maybe they should put that match on last at WrestleMania. I'm not a fan of relegating your world title to second or third rate status, but I guarantee you, if they put Batista and Randy Orton on in the main event, it's going to be a disaster. It's just going to be a disaster. And this is your WrestleMania 30 main event, right? This is one of those landmark WrestleMania shows. I mean, they'll call it the 30th anniversary. It isn't technically. And you're going to put Batista versus Randy Orton in that spot with the way the fans have been reacting to these guys. And you have a lot of international people coming in for WrestleMania. So I don't buy for a sec, oh, well, you know, you don't know how the crowd's going to be that night. They might behave themselves. I don't see that happening. I've been to two WrestleManias now. This will be my third. And it's a relatively new phenomenon. Like I said at the beginning of the podcast, we're in the middle of this very weird period here where the fans seem to be revolting. And you can say when you're at a show, people are like sheep. If one person starts a chant and 10 people pick it up and another 10 people pick it up and soon, you know, soon the entire building will be doing it because they just follow the leader. Okay, well, that's fine for one or two shows or maybe a crowd the night after WrestleMania who just wants to have fun and you get a bunch of people chanting silly stuff and it just kind of catches on. We're seeing this now week after week after week after week. You know, the story of the Royal Rumble this year is going to have nothing to do with anything that really happened on the show and have everything to do with what didn't happen and how the crowd completely hijacked it. That's the story of the Royal Rumble this year. Do they really want that to be the story of WrestleMania? They have to have enough foresight to see, okay, Randy Orton's not over. Batista has his fans, and there will be weeks where he gets more cheers in certain cities than others. But there is this underlying feeling of resentment by a certain portion of the audience that this guy was away for 4 years, he's making movies, he came back, and a lot of those people may not even know that he's back full-time. They may look at Batista and think that he's got the same kind of deal that Rock has and that Brock has, and who is this guy to come in, and we're not going to see him at house shows, and we're not going to see him on TV every week, even though Batista is doing house shows, and Batista probably will be on TV every week. But there's this underlying feeling of resentment, and you take those two things, a guy who's not over and a guy who is, but you have a segment of the audience that really just doesn't like him for whatever reason. I mean, I don't think they want to have a main event that kind of mimics Goldberg and Brock in the Garden at WrestleMania 20. That match was a spectacle. It's the only word I could come up with for it. And actually, that match wasn't any good at all. I mean, you envision a match between two big titans like Brock Lesnar and Bill Goldberg. I went back and watched that match again recently. The first, like, 10 minutes of the match is just all stalling. The match never clicked. It never worked. You could see both guys were rattled by the crowd reaction. And Batista comes off to me as the kind of guy who I don't think Batista or Orton are guys that you want to put out there. And if the crowd turns on them, I don't trust that they're going to react in a very positive way. Orton's a bit of a hothead. Batista seemed to be bothered by the whole thing. I know when the Rumble went off the air, he flipped off some guy, you know, some fan in the audience. Although we don't know what the guy said or did to him. This is a disaster waiting to happen if they keep that match as is and they put that on in the main event of WrestleMania. It's going to get ugly unless you turn it into a three-way match and you put Bryan in there, which is another idea that I've seen floated around that WWE apparently is considering, making it a three-way match with Orton, Batista, and Bryan. And God knows I hate multi-man matches as the WrestleMania main event. I think it should just be one-on-one, whatever the match is. But that's the only way you could save that match from total destruction. And why don't we just get into it right now? Because the other big story this week was last Sunday's Royal Rumble pay-per-view. And before I go on, let me just say, congratulations are in order to the people who won in our Royal Rumble pool on our Facebook group. So congrats go out to Jamie Dutton, Mackenzie Lambert, Matthew Rood, Jordan Cox, and Noah Woodhouse, all of whom had number 28 in our Royal Rumble pool. That gives you a sense of how many pools we had going, that we had that many winners, and how many people participated. So thank you to everybody who did. Number 28 was Batista in the Royal Rumble. So as promised, they get their sound off shout out. I had number 26 in the pool, which turned out to be Ryback. So sucks to be me. We had the New Age Outlaws winning their sixth tag team championship, which makes for a 14-year gap from their last title reign to their current one, which is a record. And I figured, you know, you put the belts on them. If they're going to split up Cody and Goldust, which it looks like they're going to do, you may as well put the belts on the Outlaws. Let them hold it for a little while, and then they can, I mean, I guess they could drop it back to Cody and Goldust. I don't know why you would do that unless you're going to end up keeping the two of them together. If you're going to break them up, you may as well let the Outlaws hold on to them until either the next pay-per-view or let them hold on to them until WrestleMania and drop them to the Usos. The Usos are great. The Usos have been really impressive lately. They've come a long way. They deserve a run. They deserve a shot. I'm kind of surprised they haven't held the tag belts at all yet. So I have no problem with the Outlaws winning the belts, and that's why I predicted them to win, because I figured it just makes sense. Bray Wyatt and Daniel Bryan opened the pay-per-view. They had exactly the kind of match they had to have. These two had an awesome match. Easily the match of the night, maybe the match of the year in WWE so far. They gave them over 20 minutes. They made the most of it. Bray had the best match of his career, and the right person won. Especially if Wyatt is facing John Cena at WrestleMania, the fans have to take him seriously at that level. There really was no other outcome. I have no problem with Bryan losing the match. I would have booked it the exact same way. Brock and Big Show, disappointing. It was what it needed to be in that Brock destroyed him. Brock had to destroy him. Brock's been running scared of Big Show on television for weeks, thrown around like a rag doll. And in that respect, it worked. But the match itself, I expected more. It needed to be short, and it was. But I was hoping they'd have something of an actual match. And the chair shot assault went on way too long, to the point where it felt uncomfortable. Kind of like Brett waylaying Vince McMahon with 13 chair shots at WrestleMania that one year. The crowd crapped all over Cena and Orton right from the outset. Chants of Daniel Bryan. We got chants later on of boring, Y2J, end this match, this is awful. It wasn't awful, but it was no different than the house show match I saw them have at Madison Square Garden after Christmas. And actually, that match was better, except for the cheap low blow finish. To be honest, I gotta say, you know, with Cena and Orton, they have had good matches before. I just don't think the two of them have very good chemistry together. I really don't. John Cena and CM Punk have great chemistry. Stone Cold and The Rock had great chemistry. John Cena and Randy Orton do not have good chemistry together. Now, they did an angle where Randy Orton not only beat up John Cena's dad, he broke the guy's orbital socket. Can't remember that from Raw a couple of weeks ago? He put him in the hospital. So how does John Cena react to this? He comes out wearing neon armbands and a glow-in-the-dark shirt, and he starts the match with a collar and elbow tie-up. It's like, really? Where's the fire? Where's the passion? They do these angles, and then they forget all about them 2 weeks later. Why would you even bother doing that angle? So that pissed me off. And then, remember, we were told there would be no interference in this match. I mean, technically, I guess you could argue they didn't interfere. I think that's splitting hairs. But we have the Wyatt family come out for the distraction. Orton nails the RKO, gets the pin, and Bray Wyatt lays out John Cena with Sister Abigail. So there's your WrestleMania match for John Cena. I have no problem with him not being in the championship match this year at WrestleMania. It's a welcome change. So then we have the 30-man Royal Rumble match. Just some quick notes I jotted down here, the important stuff. Alexander Rusev from NXT made his debut. No Lana with him. His Russian manager, spokesperson, whatever you want to call her. I've talked about Alexander Rusev at length in my NXT reviews, for those of you who listen to that portion of the Sound Off every week. I did not expect any NXT person in the Rumble. I just didn't think, you know, if they're a surprise and nobody knows who they are, kind of falls flat. Rusev, people seem to react to him, you know, I'll give you an example. The people I was watching the pay-per-view with are casual fans at best. They certainly don't know of NXT. They don't watch it. They've never heard of Rusev before. And their first impression of him was, whoa, that's a big guy. That's a big, you know, he's got like a thick frame. Like, this guy is huge. He's not tall, but he's big. And I've said that over and over again on NXT. He's a big guy, the kind of guy they like. He's gotten better. He's not like a great wrestler or anything like that, but he's improved. He's improved over the months that I've watched him on NXT, and it's very cool to see him get the call up. He did not appear on Raw Monday night. They did air a vignette for him on SmackDown. Lana was with him in that vignette. She used the expression "Rusev hit, Rusev crush." If he dies, he dies. Sorry, I love Rocky IV. So we'll be seeing more of him soon on TV. Other surprises, we had Kane, who was not announced. He was in the Rumble wearing slacks and no shirt. Kevin Nash, as Kevin Nash and not Diesel, with NWO music. And who botched his own elimination, which was hilarious. Got caught in the ropes on the way out. Sheamus was in there, as I figured he would be. JBL had a very brief cameo in the Rumble. And El Torito. I almost forgot about the Matadors. Talk about a team that's fallen off the face of the earth. So Torito gets the spot in the Rumble, not Hector or Juan or whatever the fuck their names are. What are their names? Fernando and Diego. I'm sorry. Fernando and Diego. Right. They were observers on this night. Torito got in the Rumble itself. So to recap, they have spots for a midget, an announcer, and Kevin Nash, but not Daniel Bryan. So you could see why a crowd chanting the man's name would be a little upset. Kofi Kingston had his big annual leaping spot. He's like Sonic the Hedgehog every year, trying to stay out of hot lava. And, you know, he fell into the arms of Alexander Rusev, who had already been eliminated. And instead of dumping him on the floor, Rusev sets him down on the barricade and delivers some knees to the kidneys, and then leaves him laying on the barricade and walks away. So Kofi did a leap that had to be a good 10 or 11 feet from the barricade to the ring. They showed it in slow motion, and he made the jump. Like, he definitely, you know, he cleared it enough, but still, he kind of landed on, like, the front part of his feet where it looked like he almost missed the apron. It was so close, so it looked awesome. And that's kind of what he's known for now. Every single year, they do that spot. Maybe one day he'll actually win it just to swerve everybody. You know, I don't know, but Goldust accidentally eliminated Cody, then he got dumped out right after. They still haven't really teased much dissension between them since then, but I'm sure that'll play into things going forward. Someone had a Hall & Oates sign in the crowd in Pittsburgh, so I love you, Pittsburgh. That was awesome. Dean Ambrose tried to eliminate Roman Reigns and failed. Ambrose got yelled at by Rollins, so this would play into the eventual split between the Shield, although there was no sign of tension between them at all on Raw Monday night. So, I guess it was just on the back burner for 1 week. Reigns did end up dumping both of them out. He broke Kane's 2001 record by getting 12 eliminations. And then there's Rey Mysterio. Poor Rey Mysterio. Tommy Dreamer actually had an awesome idea on Twitter when the show was over. He thought it would have been really cool if they could pull it off somehow, and it would have been really difficult with all the hair and the lack of tattoos. But put Daniel Bryan under the Rey Mysterio mask and have him unmask just at the right moment in the Rumble match. Or, as Christopher suggested on our Facebook group page, send Bad News Barrett out there at the number 30 spot to deliver some bad news that Daniel Bryan won't be in this year's Royal Rumble. You know, if they would have done that, if they would have had Barrett as the ultimate troll on this show, I actually would have laughed. I almost think that would have softened the blow and softened the disappointment for a lot of people. You know, laughter is the best medicine. That would have been an appropriate usage of Bad News Barrett. And I guess they just didn't think of it. Maybe they were worried they would incite a riot if they did that. But I'll say this much. The production team is going to have one hell of a job on sound editing to do. This will be like the 1992 Rumble all over again, when they miraculously made it sound like the crowd was booing Sid Justice when he dumped Hulk Hogan out of the Rumble, when in actuality, anybody who watched the live pay-per-view could hear the cheers when Hogan got dumped out and the boos when he helped eliminate Sid. So, Batista, let's just be honest here, did not get a very positive reception from the crowd, and so they may want to do a little bit of editing on that. I've seen better Rumbles. You know, I was as disappointed as many of you were that they didn't put Bryan in there, and it's not because I'm such a huge Daniel Bryan fan, and it would have been so cool to see him in the Rumble. I look at this, and I could visualize the story in my head. And I know now, you know, he's in the chamber match. They have that qualifier, the sixth man on Monday night, and so he's in the chamber. But, you know, to me, the Royal Rumble was his only ticket to a championship match. Why would the Authority give him another title match? Everybody wanted it so badly to see this guy win the Rumble match. It would have been such a satisfying conclusion, a happy way to go off the air. And they went in a different direction. And it's upsetting. It's upsetting because they don't know how to tell stories the right way. All Vince McMahon loves to say, we tell stories, right? We make movies. It's like little mini movies that we make on TV every week and we tell stories. Well, guess what? Your story sucks, dude. Your story sucks. And I've never heard a crowd boo a Royal Rumble winner this loudly before. Not a babyface anyway, not even John Cena. That's the reaction that Batista got last Sunday. Now, it was cool to see Roman Reigns get a lot of love at the end of that Rumble. It came down to Batista and Reigns. Reigns had the 12 eliminations. And at that point, when people realized, oh shit, Bryan's not coming out, they were very upset. They shifted their support to Roman Reigns. So we got Roman Reigns' chance. Batista gets booed. And then when Reigns got dumped out, it kind of, you know, everybody was all deflated and very upset. But it was still cool to see Reigns kind of, you know, get that monster Superman spot there at the end of the Rumble. But I've never seen a company so stubbornly ignore their own fans and ignore something so organic like what they have with Daniel Bryan. And it's not just an, oh, it's an IWC, Internet Wrestling Crowd, overreaction. Again, I'm watching the Rumble with two people last Sunday who were casual fans at best. They see the reactions this guy gets on television. And in one case, you know, the girl loves Total Divas. The only reason she even watches wrestling now is because of Total Divas. So at least with one fan, that show works. I haven't really seen a huge influx of new fans because of that show, but she would count as one of them. So she follows, you know, the Bellas on Instagram, and she knows all about, you know, Bree and Brian and Nikki and John Cena and all this other stuff. So, that, you know, they watch the show and they react. It's almost eerie. They react the same way that you guys do. And you guys are a hell of a lot bigger fans than they are. And they watch this and they turn to me and they say, why is he not even in the Rumble? And I don't even have a good answer for them. All I did was look at her and I said, because they're fucking idiots. That's why. So this is not just all the internet marks so salivating over themselves. Oh, I used to watch Daniel Bryan when he was in Ring of Honor. You know, oh, those internet nerds. This goes far beyond internet wrestling fans. I don't want to hear that it's all the IWC marks, okay? Fuck off with that shit. At one point this week, there was a petition on the White House website with over 100,000 signatures demanding that WWE give Daniel Bryan a championship match at WrestleMania 30. I didn't sign that one myself. I did sign the White House petition to have Justin Bieber deported. That one I did sign. And it's completely ridiculous, I agree. You're not going to start a White House petition over something like that. I mean, that's just stupid. But this goes far beyond just like internet fans. I'm so tired of reading about how it's only the internet crowd who loves Daniel Bryan. Nobody else cares about him. He's so boring. I mean, look, there are people who don't like the guy. That's fine. If you think he's short, you think he's boring, he's too vanilla, he's overrated. I'm not saying that you can't have that opinion. But I keep reading it's only the IWC marks and stuff like that. It's not true. This goes far beyond those people. But let me address something else that's been bugging me. Okay, if Bryan is going to wrestle Triple H now at WrestleMania, it's not because it was all part of the plan. If Bryan ends up going to WrestleMania to wrestle for the title, or he wins the championship at the Elimination Chamber and he defends it at WrestleMania, trust me, that was not all part of the plan. They didn't bring Dave Bautista back to headline WrestleMania in a triple threat match. If it happens, it's because you made it happen. So I say keep chanting long and loud at every show. And that could be for whoever it is that you want to see on top. If you're a real fan of Roman Reigns, hell, chant for Roman Reigns. If you're a big fan of Antonio Cesaro and you want to see him get pushed more, chant push Cesaro, as a lot of the people already do every week on NXT. When people were chanting we want Ryder every single week, between that and his YouTube show and all the hits he racked up on YouTube, which WWE took notice of, Zack Ryder ended up with the U.S. title and more TV time than he ever would have gotten otherwise. And a big part of the problem is that people are just tired of the same old faces. It's not just that people love Daniel Bryan. They want something different. John Cena versus Randy Orton is not different. Batista is not new. You'll notice nobody was chanting Daniel Bryan's name during the Brock Lesnar Big Show massacre. The idea that the crowd crapped all over everything that night that wasn't Daniel Bryan and after his match with Bray was over is complete bullshit. They behaved themselves for the Brock Big Show match because they were engaged. Maybe they were even a little bit scared for the Big Show. He did take some vicious shots with that chair. But miraculously, John Cena versus Randy Orton, which we've seen a million times over the years, I can memorize their match in my sleep. They crapped all over. There's a message there. I hope WWE listens. And I hope the fans can appreciate a match like John Cena versus Bray Wyatt. There are still people complaining, oh, it's not a WrestleMania match. It doesn't feel like a strong show. I didn't see it as a WrestleMania caliber match myself when I thought that was going to be the main event. But it's not, so I have no problem with Cena versus Wyatt. It's something different. You're getting exactly what you wanted. How is the guy ever going to get over at a high level if he's not put in high-level matches? I mean, what, would you rather see John Cena wrestling for the title again? Would you rather see another WrestleMania going off the air with John Cena winning the championship? How many fucking times do you want to see that? So it goes both ways here. I am fine with the fans chanting for Daniel Bryan. To answer all the questions I've gotten this week, do you think it's disrespectful? You know what I think is disrespectful? I think it's disrespectful for WWE to shovel the same shit down our throats week after week after week. That's what I find disrespectful. So no, I have no problem with that. I hope the crowd does continue to hijack the show every single week. I encourage people to. You paid for your ticket. If that's how you honestly feel, don't just be a sheep. If that's how you honestly feel, then go ahead and cheer and chant to your heart's content, whether it's Brian or whoever. Punk, I'm sure we're going to get plenty of Punk chants. Although, like I said, I have a little bit of sympathy for them because Punk's the one who walked out here. That was not WWE's fault. But I have no problem if every building from now until WrestleMania erupts into Daniel Bryan chants during every other segment on the show. And maybe they'll get the message, but for the people complaining about Cena and Wyatt, in that case, you're getting what you want. So, as of today, the Elimination Chamber match looks like this. Randy Orton will defend the title against John Cena, Daniel Bryan, Sheamus, Christian, and Antonio Cesaro. On SmackDown, Cesaro beat Dolph Ziggler to qualify for the Chamber with a big swing in the neutralizer. Christian beat Jack Swagger in the other Chamber qualifiers, so he's back. I did see the promo that Dolph Ziggler did on the app after his match. If you have not seen it, go now to YouTube and watch this promo. That man needs to be allowed to go out there and cut the same promo on TV. Why is this relegated to the frickin' app? That's the only thing I could think of when I was done watching it. Why was this on an app? Why is this not on Raw? Why is this not on SmackDown? And fuck SmackDown, this should be on Raw. Let's be honest here, all the focus is on Raw. You want the most eyeballs? You want the most social media chatter? Put this on Raw. Let Ziggler come out and pour his heart out and speak from the heart. Some of the best promos are work shoots. That's essentially what this was. It was raw, it was unscripted, it was heartfelt. We need more promos like that. And with the Chamber match being set, so much for Brock Lesnar being the number one contender for the championship, I guess. He is not even scheduled for the pay-per-view, which is too bad. I know he only has a certain number of dates in his contract. But why tease that angle if you're not going to follow up on it? I guess it's possible when he comes back on Raw, let's say at the end of the month or whenever he's going to be back, he could, you know, still go after the champion. It's not like he's going to wrestle for the title on Raw, though. You know what I mean? Like, if he doesn't get a championship shot, if he's not in the Chamber on this pay-per-view, and I'm guessing he's not wrestling for the title of WrestleMania unless they just completely blow up all of their WrestleMania plans. There is Seattle. Maybe, you know what? Maybe there's still a chance that Bryan ends up with the belt somehow at WrestleMania or at the Chamber and holds on to it, and they do a main event at Extreme Rules of Lesnar versus Bryan. I'm still holding on to hope. I still think as a match it would just be awesome. So I'm just brainstorming here. But yeah, no Brock in the Chamber, so that's a disappointment. Cesaro being in there, though, is a breath of fresh air. Antonio Cesaro is probably, I don't want to say the most, because there is Ziggler, there are others. He is one of the most criminally underutilized guys on that roster. I'm not saying put the belt on him. I'm just saying him being stuck in a tag team that barely gets television time. I mean, they get more time than the Conquistadors or the Matadors or whatever they are. It's just, there's so much more they could be doing with this guy. The fans, you could feel it. The fans just want to cheer this guy so badly. And I think in due time they will. I'm sure that turn will happen at some point. But letting him hang with the main event guys in the Chamber, you know, giving him a spot in the pay-per-view main event is awesome. I'm happy for the guy. And it would be cool. I don't know how long he'll last. Maybe he'll be the first one eliminated. But I think the idea of him in there with John Cena, of him in there with Bryan, they had that amazing match on Raw last year when Bryan had to run the gauntlet. He beat Swagger and had like a 20-minute match with Cesaro that was just phenomenal. So him with Bryan, Even Cesaro and Sheamus, you know, two big guys beating the crap out of each other. There's so many fresh, exciting things you can do, I think, with him and the others. And obviously he's a strong guy. Maybe he'll, you know, come up with an innovative uppercut spot that uppercut should be his finish. But very, very cool to see him in there. And Christian, too. Christian is, I think, nearing the end of his rope as far as his career. That's just how I feel. I don't think Christian's going to be around that much longer. He has 0% chance of winning the Chamber. And I think a 0% chance of ever being world champion again, especially since the titles have been unified, nor would I put the belt on him. He had his time. But still, he's very good. And him and Orton being in there, him and Orton have great chemistry. I talked about chemistry before. Cena and Orton don't have it. Cena and Punk do. Orton has that chemistry with Christian. They had great matches in 2011 for the world title. So maybe they mix it up a little bit in the chamber. I like the different possible combinations you could have. The only other thing from SmackDown I want to just touch on here was the breakup of the primetime players. Titus O'Neil and Darren Young. Darren Young got pinned by Curtis Axel. You know, anybody getting pinned by Curtis Axel, I could understand why Titus would be pissed off. And he cut a promo on Darren when the match was over about how you're dead weight and I'm tired of carrying you around. And Darren was bleeding from the mouth, so he had blood all over his mouth, which kind of added, I think, to the whole thing. And he ended up laying the guy out. He beat the crap out of Darren Young. And so ends the primetime players. And now we'll see where they go with Titus. Titus, I think, could be something as a singles guy. So I don't blame them for wanting to split them up and move him on. I just wonder if this is the right time for them to be doing that. You know, we're heading into WrestleMania. There's going to be hardly any focus paid on the undercard. I mean, a guy like Titus O'Neil, who even knows if he'll be on the WrestleMania card? I feel like maybe this might get lost in the shuffle. Maybe they should have waited until after Mania. But if they have a direction for him, great. And if they just broke these guys up with no plan and no direction, that sucks. So I hope they know what they're doing, because Titus can be something, but he needs the support. Raw last Monday night was in Cleveland. We'll just talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly here. I don't cover all things on this show, just the important stuff. Reportedly, Daniel Bryan was not scheduled originally to appear in the opening segment, at least not for a promo, but that was added as part of the rewrites. They were doing a ton of rewrites that afternoon for obvious reasons. Namely being the reaction at the Rumble and Punk walking out. And the way they did this was smart. You know, they put him out there. They made it very clear he was going to be part of the main event, which could then launch him to a main event championship match at the next pay-per-view. So that made it less likely that people would hijack other segments on the show. You know, they did start amusing themselves. The fans did during the Kofi Del Rio match. They were chanting for the announcers and all that. But otherwise, they did not hijack the show. Triple H, in that opening segment, just the ultimate troll. Even I couldn't help but just laugh and bow down at his ability to just be such a dick. You know, telling the fan, "Well, you didn't get what you wanted. Somebody didn't get what they wanted." See, and the reaction I had was the same reaction I'm sure many of you had. I would have loved to have taken that sledgehammer of his and caved his face in. And that was the reaction he was going for. And Brian came out to confront the authority, talked about the Yes Movement, which is something that the Bellas came up with, and I guess they're going to run with it now as a marketing gimmick. Gotta be careful with that. I think if you start to market this too hard, see, it's organic right now. And you don't want to take it and turn it into some corporate marketing shtick that's not cool. Maybe that's the plan. Maybe they want to do that to kill off the chance. I don't know. But that's where that whole Yes Movement thing comes from. We'll probably start seeing shirts with Yes Movement on it. He does need some new shirts. But he went face-to-face, or face-to-neck, anyway, with Triple H. Hunter called out the Shield to fight his battle for him. Seth Rollins took a spill climbing over the barricade, ended up doing a spin-a-rooney on the floor. He didn't look very happy. But it did instantly earn him a spot in the next Botchamania video. This brought out Sheamus. John Cena then came out, make the save. That set up the six-man tag main event. I thought that main event was really, really good. I really liked that match. You know, after the Rumble, the fans are clearly into Roman Reigns. They see where this is going. The writing is on the wall. They chant his name. When he tags into the match, there's a buzz in the audience. He should never tag in first in these matches. They should do it like they did here. They should always have it where he tags in last of all the members of the Shield to build up the crowd anticipation for when he does step inside. The Wyatts interfered at the end of the match, which caused the DQ, which therefore sends the babyfaces to the Elimination Chamber. So Cena, Sheamus, and Bryan all qualify, much to the chagrin of the Shield. So at least we're going to get a Shield versus Wyatt match before they split them up. I don't know why so many people are thinking this was a face turn for the Shield. I didn't see it that way. It's two heel groups facing off at the pay-per-view. Why must one group be babyfaces? They can both be heels. It's fine. This was really good stuff. It does beg the question, why would the Wyatt family interfere the way they did and give John Cena and Daniel Bryan, of all people, a shot at the WWE Championship? They could have done a better job, I think, of setting that up. Have the Wyatts attack from behind without the ref seeing it, you know, but it backfires. Or they hit the shield by accident, which leads to the finish, which does two things. Number one, it sets up Shield and Wyatts for the pay-per-view. And number two, I don't have to sit here asking why it makes no sense at all for the Shield to basically hand a title shot to the babyfaces. So, I know it's nitpicking, but that was what was going through my mind when the show was over. We had an in-ring segment on the show as well with Randy Orton, Batista, and Brock Lesnar and Paul Heyman. I could easily see them doing Lesnar versus Batista at SummerSlam after this. Hell, if they end up blowing up the WrestleMania card, maybe they do it there. Anything's possible. Everything is on the table at this point. But believe me, they did not do this tease by accident. And I do think that's a match that people would want to see. I don't know if they would... Maybe they would cheer Lesnar and Boo Batista. I don't know how the fans would react, but that is a big-time match. I would see that as like a SummerSlam main event. That could be Brock's big summer match he comes back for. Heyman and Brock, you know, they play their role so great. Heyman went up to Brad Maddox and was explaining to him that, you know, Brock is getting very impatient. He wants his title shot. There's a few options here that the Authority has. First, you could give Brock his title match against Randy Orton tonight on the show, which made no sense because how many times have we heard Paul Heyman come out and say, "My client doesn't fight for free"? So they obviously forgot that. Maybe, I guess, with the WWE Network coming, it doesn't matter anymore. Maybe that was the rationale. Anyway, he gave Maddox a couple of options to take back to Triple H and Stephanie. Triple H and Stephanie ended up denying his request, which brought Brock back out during the tag team title rematch between the Outlaws and the Rhodes Brothers. And Brock laid out the Rhodes boys, beat them down with chairs, laid them out with F5s. And we're going to get the rematch of the rematch this Monday on Raw. They're putting the Rhodes and the Outlaws back together for the tag titles in a steel cage. So that will be one of your main events on Raw this week. Kofi Kingston and Alberto Del Rio had a match. I only bring it up because the crowd got bored. They started chanting for the announcers. When they chanted JBL's name, he stood up. And Del Rio got so pissed off, he snapped at him. He actually snapped at JBL. He looked down at him. And he told them flat out, "Sit your ass down," to which JBL obliged. They chanted Lawler's name, and he stood up too. Now, maybe it was Vince McMahon in their ear telling them to take a bow. If it wasn't, these guys should know better. You know, the fans are going to chant what they want to chant. They paid their money. But for them to do that, in the announcers, that is, for them to do that in the middle of the match, to stand up and acknowledge it and stoke the cheers even more, you know, the first time last year when they all started, when all this stuff started the night after WrestleMania and they did that, fine. Now it happens so frequently where you can't be standing up in the middle of a match like that. You just can't do that. I don't blame Del Rio for getting pissed off. And he won with a kick to the head. I assume he's being fed to Batista at the pay-per-view. We had a Divas match with the Bellas and the Funkadactyls, beating AJ and Tamina, Oksana and Alicia Fox. Stopwatch had this at a whopping 5 minutes 40 seconds. A long match by Diva standards, this was. They even pulled off a triple suplex spot near the end. Naomi pinned AJ with the rear view. I thought this was the best the Divas have looked on Raw in a long, long time. So I thought this was good stuff. And then we found out that Jake the Snake Roberts is the second inductee, announced for the WWE Hall of Fame class of 2014. He joins the Ultimate Warrior, two legends from my childhood, both very deserving. So that may explain why there was no Rumble cameo for Jake. And Jake has come a long way. We all know the story. He's cleaned up his act. I mean, he's had a few slip-ups, and he may have more in the future. But by and large, he is doing as well as he has done in probably most of his adult life. And a lot of that is due to DDP's intervention. And if anything, I would have DDP do the induction for Jake at the Hall of Fame. I think it would be appropriate. By the way, on the DDP front, totally having nothing to do with any of this, I saw that DDP is going to be on Shark Tank, which is that show on ABC where you make a pitch, whatever your invention or your product is or your service, and They're looking for investors. See, this is how they could have done this with TNA. They could have had Dixie Carter go on Shark Tank and be like, I need a new investor. Would one of you be my new investor? Maybe Mark Cuban could have been the new investor in TNA. You see, there's some cross-promotion there. That would have gotten TNA on ABC, would have given them some exposure. I'm thinking too much about this. But DDP is going to be on Shark Tank February 21st. When the show comes back, he's going to be pitching DDP Yoga on the show. So anybody who's a fan of Shark Tank like I am, or just wants to see what happens, that's on the 21st. You could check that out. Back to Jake. He has come a long way. He was knocking on death's door plenty of times in his life. There was a moment on this show many, many years ago, one of the early sound-offs I did, when I was going off on Jake and I was going off on Scott Hall, who also seems to be doing very well now thanks to DDP. And I said I didn't think Jake Roberts was going to live another 5 years. I thought within the next 5 years, Jake the Snake was going to be dead. And I'm sure Jake the Snake felt the same way. Jake has done interviews where he says, I can't understand how so many of my friends and so many of my colleagues over the years who did a lot of the same stuff that I did, the drugs and everything else, they're gone, and of all the shit that I've done, I'm still here. He can't even understand it, but he is. And he's looking good, and I'm happy for him. I'm happy to see him going into the Hall of Fame. I'm happy to say I was wrong. He has turned his life around. He's turned a new leaf, and that's really, really cool. And Jake is one of those guys who did not need to hold a championship to get over, or to stay over, for that matter. And he's more than deserving of a Hall of Fame nod, even without holding a belt in WWE. He was never a top guy, but he was always near the top. You know, his feuds with Ricky Steamboat, Ravishing Rick Rude, Andre the Giant, Ted DiBiase, of course Randy Savage, my favorite. He did have a pay-per-view main event in WCW one time with Sting. I think it was that Coal Miner's Glove match where his own snake bit him on the face at the end of the match. Legit, and he had to pry it off. He never worked with Hogan, aside from some house show matches. They were partners at Survivor Series one year, but that was about it. And I've always been intrigued by the Hogan-Jake thing, because I remember hearing about the angle that was shot when Hogan was in the midst of his run with the belt. He was at the peak of his popularity during the Hulkamania boom, and Jake was a heel at the time, and there was a segment that was taped. And I had to search for the date, but I thought about this before, and I looked it up, and it sounds like it would have been November 23rd, 1986, on Wrestling Challenge. So this did air. Jake interviewed Hogan on his Snake Pit segment. That was his interview segment at the time. The idea was that it would set up Hogan's next feud with Jake because Hogan needed a heel to be fed at the time. The problem is, when the segment was over, Jake laid Hogan out with the DDT, and people in the building cheered. Maybe not everybody, but enough to where it was very noticeable. And Hogan and Vince McMahon freaked out over the reaction, and they nixed the whole feud because the last thing they wanted was for Hogan to get booed at the buildings and for Jake to get over as a babyface. So they killed it to protect Hogan, and they turned Roberts babyface a couple months later. That's when they did the angle where Honky Tonk Man just killed him with a guitar shot over the head. That gave Jake a pretty serious neck injury, and I don't think he ever really fully recovered from that. I'm not sure if the guitar wasn't gimmicked or if Honky was just being reckless, but, I mean, it was a brutal shot. Anyway, as best as I can tell, the segment did air on Challenge, but what they did in most markets was they cut the segment off at the point that Hogan walked off the set. I think he got all upset over Jake, his questions or something like that, and he walked off. That's what most people would have seen. Live in the building, the segment continued, and Hogan came back and he got DDT'd, and I believe the one market where the full segment did air was on television in Providence, Rhode Island. Because Hogan and Jake had some house show matches in the Providence market coming up after the segment aired, and they left it in there for those people to help beef up ticket sales for those events. That angle set up those matches in the Providence market. I think they had a match in December. I know there was a match in January of 87. It's in the house show records if you look it up. I find this all fascinating. I'm a wrestling nerd. What can I say? Hogan versus Jake would have been a cool feud had they given it a chance. You know, you do that match today with Hogan as the Superman babyface and Jake as the heel, and I guarantee you the crowd turns on Hogan and cheers Jake. I mean, that goes without saying. But, I mean, this was in 1986. I mean, that was hardly an era of you know, smart marks and internet fans and all that kind of stuff, and they cheered Jake when he laid out Hogan. So I wish that full segment was available online somewhere. I'm kind of surprised they didn't put it on the Jake DVD they put out many years ago, Pick Your Poison, which I have a copy of. It's actually very good. I'm surprised they didn't put it on there as an extra. You know, it is super, super rare stuff. So maybe one day we'll see it, maybe on the network. You know, if they want to put some really rare stuff on there, that would certainly qualify. So on Raw, we got the main event, which I already talked about. Some good stuff on the show, I would say. I'll give them a pass for the rest of it. I'm sure, you know, the writers were not overly thrilled to be rewriting the show an hour before they went on the air. These three-hour shows are so long. My new way of grading whether or not Raw was any good was by how sleepy I am when we hit hour number three. You know, last week I was relatively alert at 10:20 p.m., so that's good. That's a good sign. As if this week wasn't busy enough, some other WWE news and notes. Lots of rumors swirling that New Japan star Prince Devitt has an offer on the table from WWE. They've wanted him for a long time now. There's actually a match between Devitt and Adrian Neville now on NXT that led to Neville being signed to a WWE contract. So he's going to have to make a decision shortly on what he wants to do, you know, whether he wants to stay with New Japan or move to the U.S. Devitt was actually backstage at the recent TNA show in Dublin. They want him, you know, in their company as well. I don't see that happening, though. I think it'll be, you know, WWE or New Japan. Also, Kenta, star of the Pro Wrestling Noah promotion in Japan, who apparently is a huge WWE fan, flew from Japan to Orlando last Sunday to the WWE Performance Center. He was there all week. They were taking a look at him. Kenta posted a response on a message board online or on a blog, not a message board, addressing the whole thing, saying he wasn't there for a tryout, he wasn't there for an evaluation, it was a dream of his to just, he felt like he had to give it a shot, and he got the blessing of, you know, the promoter from Noah to fly over and just work out in the ring and whatever else he did while he was down. He was there for the week. It wasn't like it was a one-and-done type of thing, so he claims it wasn't a tryout, it was just something he wanted to do. It was like a dream of his. It was a goal that he set. He always wanted to go over there and, you know, whatever. Yeah, right. Okay. It wasn't a tryout. Let me say this. If WWE ends up signing Devitt and Kenta, and I would think there is a chance that they would want to sign Kenta, those two are huge pickups right there for them, okay? But their track record with Japanese talent is really not all that great. I'd be a little concerned. I've seen Kenta wrestle live at some Ring of Honor shows many years ago against Daniel Bryan. And the guy is good. You know, that was 6 or 7 years ago, so he's older now, but he's still very good. I just wonder, you know, if they sign him now that Punk is gone, if they'll let him use the GTS as his finish, since Punk stole the move from him in the first place. I think Punk's admitted that, too, that he took it from Kenta. You know, and come to think of it, you know, Brian stole his flying knee finish from Kenta as well. This poor fucker has all of his signature moves stolen, and now he's going to come over, and he can't even use them. Anyway, he's going to be making an announcement about his career on Monday at the Noah show. So by the time many of you listen to this, I'm sure his announcement will have already been made, and I presume we will know at that point whether he is Orlando-bound or not. Lastly here, have to mention this, because I've talked about this on the podcast before. It is another one of those stories that just intrigues the hell out of me. And there was a big development this week in the case of Jimmy Snuka and the death of his former mistress slash girlfriend, Nancy Argentino, over 30 years ago. 31 years, almost. There will be a grand jury investigation of the death of Nancy Argentino. She was 23 years old when she was found... She wasn't found dead. She was found in great distress, and then I think she died at the hospital, but she was in a hotel room. She had been staying with Snuka. Back then, WWE had a lot of TV tapings in Allentown, Pennsylvania, and I believe that's where they were. They were at the George Washington Motor Lodge. I don't know if it was in Allentown or nearby, but I believe he went to the matches, came back, and supposedly found her with, you know, yellow liquid oozing from her mouth, and he freaked out, and they took her to the hospital, and she died. But it was announced this week that the district attorney is initiating a grand jury investigation. She died of blunt head trauma at the hospital. That was the official diagnosis of what caused her death. And here's the thing about Snuka. Snuka has claimed, and Snuka wrote a book, and the reason this is all bubbling up now is because Irv Mushnick is somebody who has covered this story at great length for a number of years. He and Nancy's family partnered together for an ebook that came out some years ago about her daughter, their daughter, I should say, and the whole case. And there were some things in there that the family claims. Granted, it's from one side, but there are some really freaky things. Like, I haven't read the book, but I've read bits and pieces of some of the kind of more morbid stuff from the book, including one, little episode, if you want to call it that, from her wake when Snuka showed up. I mean, this guy was just messed up. But between that and between them coming upon the 30th anniversary of her death, and local newspapers decided to do this whole big story on the case and on the investigation. Snuka had his own book come out in the last couple of years, and he addressed the story in his own book. So all of these things together caused this story, which has been dormant for decades now, to bubble back up to the surface. And now, all these years later, here we are. And you could probably thank a lot of that to those newspaper stories from last year, which I linked to on my Twitter. That was when I covered it here on the Sound Off, is when the anniversary came and those newspaper stories came out. Snuka, in his book and elsewhere, has claimed that what happened was that they were driving. He let her out of the car because she had to go to the bathroom. She went to the bathroom on the side of the road, fell, and hit her head. Came back in the car. She said she wasn't feeling well or whatever, but otherwise seemed okay. And then I guess back at the hotel, she still wasn't feeling well, had a headache or whatever, and he left her. She went to bed. Then eventually he came back, and that's when he found her the way that she was. Okay, I think in his book, that's the story he goes with. Well, what's happened is that there was a lot of records and evidence and stuff that was not released at that time. Other stuff has come up. It's not like it's just an old case or a cold case, and they're just drumming up old news, and it's not stuff we don't already know. There has been stuff that has come out that a lot of people did not know. And apparently they felt enough stuff to where they're finally, after all these years, going to have somebody investigate this freaking thing. For a number of years, as far as anybody knew, the coroner never ruled on how she died. Again, it was blunt head trauma, but there was never any ruling people thought made. Was it an accident? Did she hit her own head? Did somebody murder her? Whatever the case may be, there was an autopsy report that had not previously been seen that has since been released, where the coroner ruled that, in his opinion, it should be treated as a homicide pending investigation. He thought it was murder. And there's a transcript that came out of Snuka's initial police interview that finally got released. He changed his story about four or five different times. Originally, he said he shoved her, during some horseplay. He shoved her and she fell and hit her head. And then eventually came the story about, she has to go relieve herself on the side of the road, and she slipped and hit her head then. So he gave a lot of contradictory stories to a lot of different people at that time at the hospital the night that this all went down. Vince McMahon came to Pennsylvania to speak with the local authorities, and shortly after that, things were dropped, and nothing happened. Now again, what happened with Vince, the whole story about how Vince showed up with a briefcase and met with local authorities, nobody was in the meeting, nobody has said what happened during that meeting, nobody knows. I'm sure Vince was there to try to clean up the mess as much as he could, whether he knew that what Snuka did or didn't do, who knows? But this could have repercussions. I mean, I asked the question on Twitter. I wonder if it can be proven that Vince was trying to cover this up, if Snuka really did murder his girlfriend. And I believe he did. I think he's guilty of sin. That's my opinion. And the family has thought that for a number of years. And we have a family friend. My family has a family friend who was best friends with Nancy. So I knew about this case many, many years ago. This isn't anything new for me either. I heard about this case probably when I was in my teens is when I first heard about it, because I remember being over at my friend's house, and when we brought up wrestling, it was a touchy subject with my friend's mother, and I didn't know why. And then I was told, listen, don't bring up wrestling and certainly don't bring up Snuka, because she was best friends with Nancy and figured what probably everybody else figured, which is that he killed her. And there's certainly a lot of other, maybe not direct evidence, but Snuka back then had a temper. There was a story when they were in a hotel, I believe, somewhere, and cops had to be called, I think because he was assaulting her, he beat her up or whatever, and it took like 9 police officers and a couple of police dogs just to get a handcuff on Snuka. Notice I said cuff, not even cuffs, to get a handcuff on one of his wrists because he was resisting arrest and fighting back. This big jack, I mean, he's not like tall, but Snuka was ripped, this jacked up dude, weighing probably 250, 260 at the time, in nothing but his underwear, apparently. 9 police officers and a couple of police dogs it took. I mean, today you'd have tasers and whatever else to try to subdue him, but that's well documented. There is a history of abuse. So that also doesn't speak very, very kindly of him. I've always thought the dude was guilty and he got away with murder. I don't know whether somebody, you know, Vince or whoever helped cover it up, but when I heard about this, I said, good. I hope they do an investigation. What they're going to find, I don't know. Maybe they do the investigation and nothing happens. They don't have enough evidence and Snuka gets off. You know what, though? If they feel they have enough evidence and they come to the conclusion that this guy should be indicted and they think that he murdered this woman, then I hope they prosecute him and I hope he gets punished. I don't care if he's 70 years old and he's all frail and shit. There's no statute of limitation on murder. If this guy murdered his girlfriend, he gets what he deserves. I hope he does. So I'm going to be following this story very closely. I'm very, very interested to see how this turns out and what the potential fallout could be. I don't think it would have an impact, you know, on his daughter, you know, Tamina or anything like that. I mean, she has nothing to do with this. If he's guilty, he should be punished. As busy as this week was, I can always make time for NXT. William Regal was back on commentary this week, along with Alex Riley. They joined Tom Phillips. Very happy to see your lordship back in the booth. I was a little nervous last week. It just looked to me like maybe they were going to go with Phillips, Byron Saxon, and Tenzai as the permanent crew. And Tenzai's good. I like Tenzai. But Regal, I mean, come on. Regal's Regal. Saxton was back to ring announcing this week, so no Mrs. Cody Rhodes. Boo, I say. The Ascension beat 2 guys I don't know with the Fall of Man. The Ascension just bores me to tears. I just, you know, there was something about them. I liked the kind of the dark nature of the character very early on. And as time has gone on, they play the exact same character. They don't talk. They hardly talk. There's no backstory. They're just boring. So they're quickly turning into one of my least favorite acts on this show. Throughout the show, we had a series of vignettes with Sylvester Lefort holding auditions for his new protege. First, we had a kid by the name of Cal Bishop, who was disqualified from the running for having cauliflower ears. That's cauliflower ear discrimination right there, I'll have you know. Then it was Sawyer Fulton, another guy who I have never seen before. He appeared to be making a pass at Sylvester Lefort. That's a winning gimmick right there. Finally, it culminated with Mason Ryan, Batista Jr., saying he would agree to be Lefort's new assignee if Lefort could beat him in a match next week. So, oh goody, we have that to look forward to. The savior of misbehavior himself, Corey Graves, is back on NXT. He's been gone for a while after his recent concussion. Cut a brief promo before his match, bringing up Adrian Neville's name again, so I wonder if that's a hint that he might be rearing his head when Neville faces Bo Dallas for the title on the 27th, maybe cost him the championship, or it could set up Neville's first challenger if he wins the belt. A little foreshadowing there, perhaps. Out comes Camacho on his bicycle. He looks ridiculous coming out on that thing. The announcers made it a point on the show to mention that Camacho now is a singles wrestler. He is branching off on his own to pursue a singles career, I guess now that Sin Junico has been a bit busy of late. So he got a little bit of offense in. Corey Graves, though, took care of him surprisingly quickly. He beat him in like 2 minutes. Tapped him out with his lucky 13 submission hold. I've always said Corey Graves reminds me of a cross between CM Punk and Jeff Hardy. And now that Punk is gone for the time being, maybe there's an opening for the guy. I could see him getting over big as a babyface, especially with the women. Antonio Cesaro is backstage. He just doesn't understand why some people just cannot take no for an answer. He is not wrestling Sami Zayn again, he insists, even though he is. Then he looks at Devin Taylor, the interviewer, and he says, "I'm not even sure why I'm bothering to explain myself to you." And he walks off. So Cesaro is going to go from headlining the Elimination Chamber to 4 days later wrestling Sami Zayn on the live NXT special. I don't know that that bodes very well for his chances in the chamber. Bayley and Sasha Banks had a match. Natalya was back again in Bayley's corner. She's basically more of a regular on this show than she is on Raw these days. The BFFs were in Sasha's corner, and Charlotte's bust was rather noticeable. I don't remember it standing out quite as much before. Kind of makes you wonder why she was really gone with all that time off, what she may have been doing. Bayley won with her belly-to-Bayley suplex. Good match. I like Bayley's aggression at the beginning. She wanted to get at Charlotte in the worst way on the outside for turning on her. Maybe they'll build to a match between them on the 27th, since they're building up that live special is almost like an NXT pay-per-view. I could see them blowing it off there. Tyler Breeze and Colin Cassidy had the match of the night, segment of the night. Call it whatever you want. It was a 3-minute match, but easily the highlight of the entire show. Both these guys are awesome. Tyler Breeze, we all know his shtick. He comes out, he takes selfies of himself as he comes down to the ring. "Don't hit my face, I'm a model, I'm a superstar," all this kind of stuff. Well, Colin Cassidy says, "I'm going to have a little bit of fun with this." He goes outside, he grabs a fan's mobile phone, and starts to take selfies of himself with the fan's phone. And you know, everyone's cheering, and they're chanting, I think, "This is awesome." I think it actually got a "This is awesome" chant, if I remember. Gives the phone back, comes into the ring. There's a lot of stalling at the beginning of this match, I will say, so some people might look at this and go, "I don't know what's so great about it. No action." That's not the point. This wasn't supposed to be action from bell to bell. This was entertaining. This is what I call an entertaining segment. This is the form of sports entertainment that I actually like. I like Tyler Breeze, and I got to say, you know, Colin Cassidy has come very, very far. Enzo Amore got hurt. Enzo was the mouthpiece of the group. I mean, they would both wrestle. Colin was always the guy, kind of the heavy. But Enzo was the star of that tandem, and Enzo broke his leg many months ago. I think he's either back now or about to come back soon. But he broke his leg, and so Cassidy had to go out on his own. And I was a little concerned, you know, hey, this guy is missing his mouthpiece. I don't know how good of a talker he is. He's going to kind of get lost in the shuffle. And that's the opposite of what's happened. What's happened is that Cassidy, in many ways, has become the star of this group. I mean, Enzo is still great, but Colin Cassidy actually got to show off his personality. He got to show off his sense of humor. He got to show off his singing ability, which isn't terrible. He's wrestling more often than he was before. And he's impressive. He's very impressive, and he's got the fans behind him. The fans have come to love Colin Cassidy. I just found out a friend of mine was on the basketball team with him at NYU. I had no idea up until a couple of days ago. So I don't know why I mentioned that. I just figured I would throw that in there. Apparently he played basketball at NYU, which is not surprising since the guy is almost 7 feet tall. He is a very tall man. So they have this selfie contest, which was funny. Tyler Breeze at one point got very agitated when the referee must have touched him. And so Breeze turns around, he starts yelling at the ref, "Don't touch me!" People laughed. Aiden English popped up on the Titantron to distract Colin Cassidy. Backstage, we saw that Aiden was walking into the dressing room with Enzo Amore. Enzo, of course, still with the broken leg in a wheelchair. Aiden walks in, closes the door behind him. We hear some stuff going on. Colin Cassidy turns right into a beauty shot, which is Tyler Breeze's spinning heel kick, and he gets the pin. So Tyler Breeze wins, and when the match is over, Colin Cassidy goes backstage. He's trying to get to Aiden English before he can do damage to Enzo Amore. And what we end up with is this great segment with Enzo and with Colin, and I may as well just play the audio for you.
Yo, Angel, where'd he go?
Thank God you came, dude. He's gone. I'm telling you, though.
Where'd he go?
Hey, Nicholas, he came in here, all right? Yeah. His skin looked sticky to the touch. Okay, he had this weird look in his eye. His mouth was swirling with soap. I told him, if he kept talking slick, I told him bite his tongue and bleed, or I was going to kick his hind end.
Enzo, you're in a wheelchair. You can't kick anybody's hind end, okay? What'd he do? Touché. Did he train you?
Touche.
He trained you?
Yeah, he pretty much threatened me.
Is he playing games, huh?
He wants to play games. That's what it's looking like.
Okay. Yeah. Well, he ain't the only one that could play games, and we ain't talking chess.
I never played chess. I don't play chess.
That's why I said we ain't playing chess, all right? We're talking boulder dash.
I don't.
Bring around the rosy.
I don't.
Connect four.
I don't.
Hopscotch.
I don't.
Connect four.
I don't.
Stop saying I don't.
I don't.
I'm not doing well, Enzo. Aiden English just cost me a W.
That's a real chicharu.
Yeah. I'm going to get some payback. What type of dude threatens somebody in a wheelchair?
I'll tell you what kind of dude. A dude who's S-A-W-F-T.
Soft.
I love those two guys together. I hope when they get called up, they have to call them up together. It would be a crime for them to call one up over the other. So, yeah, hopefully we'll see them sooner rather than later. I didn't predict that they would be among the call-ups for this year, but I certainly wouldn't mind if they were. Then we had The Miz against CJ Parker. Forget CM Punk for a second. William Regal is truly the voice of the voiceless. He had two gems on commentary in reference to The Miz. First, he said The Miz reminds him of Kermit without the talent. And then he said, there's just something about him that makes me want to punch his face in at every opportunity. Thank you. Have I not been saying this for months? And he's a babyface. He's still miscast. William Regal is great. So we had the match, Miz and CJ Parker. I made my thoughts abundantly clear on this last week, but to be fair, the match was good. They had a good match. Nothing wrong with it. You know, Parker showed a little more fire than he usually does, and clearly they're positioning him as a heel, because on commentary they were talking about how, I forgot who it was, whether it was Alex Riley or whoever had spoken to CJ Parker, and they said, CJ Parker just can't understand why the fans are booing him. So obviously, that's the direction they're going in with him. The Miz was fine, the people were into him. The match was good, and in the end, The Miz won with the figure four leg lock, and I got nothing else to say. I can't knock it. It was a good match. Backstage, Sami Zayn said that if Antonio Cesaro wants to turn down his challenge, let him do it in the ring, face-to-face, next week. It works for me. Finally, it's time for the championship contract signing with Bo Dallas and Adrian Neville. Renee Young is in the ring for the introductions with the contract in hand. I'm sure many men are sitting at home watching Renee with something else in their hand. I'm sorry. Neville is out first. He's wearing a pink polo shirt, which looks a little too tight for him. Dallas is MIA when his music plays, and so his music plays a second time. Finally, he comes out. And I like this a lot, because this is the first time I can recall where Bo Dallas actually showed some real attitude. He got all up in Neville's face. And by the way, I watched this, and all I could think of is, my God, Adrian Neville is short. You look at him next to some of these guys, and it's not even like Bo Dallas is all that big. I mean, how big could Bo Dallas possibly be? 6 feet? 6'2", maybe? Probably not even. You know, and you look at Adrian Neville standing next to a guy like him, and he stands out, and not for all the right reasons either. But anyway, Bo tells him that he's getting real tired of seeing Neville. He tells him to grab his girl, that being Renee, and take a seat on the outside, and you watch what I do. And then he calls for his opponent to be sent out. This was the most intense that I've ever seen Bo Dallas on NXT. I want to see more of that. I want to see more intense Bo Dallas mixed in with the cheesy aspects of his character. You know, the character is really heel, but he pretends to be a babyface, and he loves the fans, and all this other stuff. It's almost like this bizarro version of John Cena. John Cena would be great if he would come out like Superman, the cheesy baby face, but we all knew underneath he was just waiting to explode. He was actually a heel. But they don't do that. They send him out there as the cheesy babyface because that's what he is. He's a cheesy babyface. So anyway, I like this. Danny Burch was the opponent who came out. Dallas just mauled him for a couple of minutes as Neville and Renee watched from the outside. Then he finished him off. And he grabs a mic. He says to Neville, bring that damn contract in this ring right now and I'll sign it. So he does. He signs it. Tells Neville he'll see him on the 27th. And then he cheap shots him with a forearm to the back of the head. After leaving the ring, Neville recovers. He catches Dallas with a tope out to the floor. And we go off the air with both guys brawling up the ramp to shockingly little crowd heat. That was the only negative to this whole thing. You could hear a pin drop as these guys were rolling around on the ground as we faded to black. But I am looking forward to the NXT special on February 27th. I have some news on that. It is being dubbed NXT Arrival. That is the name they are giving it. And besides the two matches I already mentioned, Bo Dallas and Adrian Neville in a ladder match, what will be announced, spoiler, whatever. It's going to be a ladder match, people, for the NXT title. And Antonio Cesaro will be wrestling Sami Zayn in a 2 out of 3 falls rematch from their epic encounter last year. We also know that Paige will be defending her NXT women's title against Emma. And also appearing on the show, they're bringing in the big guns. I'm not sure if all of these guys are going to be on camera or not, but they're being brought in for the show. John Cena, Shawn Michaels, Diesel, Bret Hart, and Paul Heyman are all being advertised for this show. And my great fantasy booking scenario here would have Paige lose the women's title to Emma and then snap and beat the crap out of her after the match. And then Paul Heyman comes out smiling and Paige leaves with Paul Heyman and she comes to the main roster as the first Heyman girl. Come on, it's a great idea. Book it. Check this out, guys. For you, the listeners of The Sound Off, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial so that you can check out their service. And it's a quality service. I wouldn't be mentioning it on my show if it wasn't. They have a bunch of wrestling books to choose from in audio form, including Lex Luger's book, Dusty Rhodes' book, Hulk Hogan's book is available with narration from the Hulkster himself. There's even one that chronicles the rise of the late Junkyard Dog in Mid-South, which sounds really interesting. You can choose any one of those free by trying audible.com. If you commute to work, or if you like listening to things other than music at the gym, I know a lot of people listen to this podcast that way. It seems to me an audiobook would absolutely make sense. To get one, make sure you go to audibletrial.com/Solomonster. It's another way to show your support for The Sound Off, and you get something free in return. Can't beat that. Again, that's audibletrial.com/Solomonster. TNA is in the midst of their European tour. Impact this past Thursday night was from Glasgow, Scotland. Hot crowd in Scotland. I enjoyed most of the show. I thought the last 15 seconds was pretty dumb. But that aside, there was enough stuff on the show that I liked, even with that and all the Dixie Carter segments, which I am not a fan of all the Dixie Carter stuff. The Dixie Carter overload on Impact every single week, how everything is just based around this woman who isn't even a good actress. That aside, I like this show. We were told that Taz was on assignment in the U.S., and so Jeremy Borash handled the announcing with Mike Tenay. Yes, if by assignment you mean sitting on the couch eating Malamars and watching the show on TV, then yes, Taz was on assignment. We had the opening segment with Samoa Joe and Kurt Angle in the ring. Out comes Magnus, EC3, and Rockstar Spud. They have a verbal joust back and forth. This was all just to set up the main event, which was a tag team match pitting Joe and Kurt against Magnus and EC3 with the stipulation that if Magnus and EC3 won, Kurt and Joe would be gone from TNA. Now, I wonder, why would Dixie Carter want that? Dixie Carter, when she came out, didn't seem overly bothered by that aspect of the stipulations. Why would Dixie, as the owner of the company, want to lose, after already losing AJ Styles, who she hated, okay, fine, lost Jeff Hardy, which she also didn't seem to mind, even though he's one of their biggest stars, Sting, who was their biggest star. She's perfectly content, apparently, to lose Samoa Joe and Kurt Angle and Jeff Hardy and Sting and AJ Styles. I am convinced that the Dixie Carter character, based on the stupid decisions that she makes, the way she acts, and this, actually wants her company to die. So if Magnus and EC3 win, then Joe and Kurt are gone. But if Joe and Kurt win, Whoever gets the winning fall in the match is the number one contender for the World Heavyweight title. And we have more of this paper champion stuff. They get the crowd to chant paper champion, and Magnus gets all pissed off. He agrees to the stipulation. Dixie comes out, says, no, this match is not happening, absolutely not. And she admits, we can't do this because I can't run the risk of you losing the title. Another question, if I may interject here, at the risk of sounding like I'm nitpicking too much, I don't think I am. Why does she care? What is the problem? What is the big deal if Magnus loses the championship to either Samoa Joe or Kurt Angle? I know Joe is not fond of Dixie, and they've had a few segments together recently, but Joe is one of the biggest stars on the TNA roster. He's been there almost a decade. Kurt Angle has been there almost a decade. Olympic gold medalist. He's held their world title multiple times before. Again, one of the biggest stars they have. Why is Dixie having a nervous breakdown that Magnus might lose the belt to either of these two guys who have been working for Dixie for 8 years now? I don't get this. That's why the stuff with Dixie doesn't work for me, because it just seems forced and contrived, and like they're copying off every other wrestling storyline in existence, whether it's WWE, Ring of Honor, because Ring of Honor's done some stuff also with authority figures. You know, back when Jim Cornette was there, they did the stuff with Cornette and Kevin Steen. I mean, the whole authority figure against your top rebel babyface storyline has been done to death in wrestling. You know, you could point to Austin versus McMahon kind of was maybe the most successful version of it. At least then, you know, Austin would come out and he would flip people off. He was completely disrespectful, drank beer, all the shit that Austin put McMahon through. It still didn't make any sense that Vince tried very hard to get rid of his meal ticket, but you could at least say, Austin is disrespectful, Austin is obscene, I cannot have this man representing my company as its champion. What's so bad about Kurt Angle or Samoa Joe being the champ? Why does this woman care so much? So that didn't really work for me. But Magnus basically overruled her and said, no, we're doing the match. So that set up the main event. Velvet Sky and Madison Rayne, part of the Beautiful, I guess two-thirds of the Beautiful People, reunited, beat Gail Kim and Lady Tapa in a nothing match. I mean, this match, I don't even know if this match went a full 2 minutes. It was the post-match angle that really is what mattered here. Chris Sabin came out. I love Chris Sabin in the segment. I thought he was great. He came out, he was so hateable. He came out to confront Velvet. He wanted to know, why haven't you responded to my phone calls, my Facebook messages, my text messages, my tweets? Somebody go back and check Saban's Twitter from this past week and tell me if he actually was tweeting Velvet. Tell me if he was sending storyline tweets to her, if he just made that up. So he confronts her and he wants to know, you know, what's the deal with you? What is up? You're my girlfriend. We're still together. Girlfriends are not supposed to gloat or whatever word he used, you know, when their boyfriend loses, especially loses a championship. Because remember, she helped cost him the X Division title the week before. And he was like, you know, is it that time of the month? Is it your hormones? Like, what's up with you? And Velvet looks him dead in the eye and she screams, we're done. And she leaves. So, in storyline, Chris Sabin and Velvet Sky are no more. I still don't know if they're together in real life. I was always of the impression that they were dating in real life, like before the storyline even started. I guess if that's true, I'm sure they must still be dating. But now, I don't know. I'm not so sure anymore. But so that's the update on Velvet Sky and Chris Sabin. They are no more. Kurt Angle and Samoa Joe were backstage in this segment. This is something else I really enjoyed. They tracked down Bobby Roode in his locker room. Bobby Roode, of course, has been in a blood feud for months with Kurt Angle that they blew off in that cage match last week where Kurt won. And Roode has played a very instrumental role in the departures of AJ Styles and the departure of Sting from TNA. It was Roode who interfered and laid out AJ with his finishing move. I think he gave him like three finishing moves. He did the same thing to Sting the week before. And so they find Bobby Roode, they attack him. It was actually Joe, it wasn't even Kurt. It was Kurt Angle having to restrain Samoa Joe. Because Joe grabbed Roode by the throat, he choked him, he threatened him. He said, listen, you come out for our match later. You do anything to mess this match up for us. I mean, I loved Samoa Joe in this segment. The intensity of Joe is just great when they let him go ahead and do his thing. And I'm happy to see them finally pushing Joe again, you know, even if they are only doing it because all their other experiments were failures. You know, everybody else failed. All the other, like, ex-WWE guys, everybody we brought in was a failure. So I guess we have to go back to Samoa Joe. So I can only give TNA so much credit. I'm just happy to see Joe in a high-profile position again. So that's really cool. We had a segment with James Storm and Gunner. James Storm and Gunner, former tag team partners, have had their issues of late. They had a match recently. James Storm came out, and I've been saying it looked to me like James Storm was pitching for a heel turn. It looked like that's the direction they were going in. I haven't seen any of the spoilers for Impact the next week or two, whatever they've taped, so I don't know if they're still going in that direction, but they did not convince me otherwise, even when the segment was over, that James Storm ain't going heel. He's going heel. I'm almost sure of it, because that's what they've been building to. I almost thought he was going to lay out Gunner at the end of the segment, but he didn't, so I assume they're just holding off on it for a little bit. So he called out Gunner to apologize. He apologized to Gunner, and then Gunner cut the best interview of his life. He was great. Gunner was great here. He wasn't stammering or stumbling. He spoke with conviction. He talked about being, a military man and seeing his brothers on the battlefield being killed, bullets whizzing by their heads. And it was funny because they're overseas. They're not even in the U.S. They're taping this in Scotland. And so you have these international fans who are listening to the story about this American soldier talking about killing people. And you run the risk that the fans are not going to be able to relate, or they're going to turn on you, because I don't know that there are many international folks who think very kindly of the U.S. when it comes to stuff like that. I mean, it's not an issue of disrespecting the soldiers themselves, but you kind of straddle that political line a little bit here. But, you know, to their credit, the fans actually, not only did they cheer Gunner, but there were some people who actually started a USA chant in the crowd. Maybe it was some Americans in the crowd, I don't know. But everything that he said, but it's a testament to the effectiveness of his promo, I think, that the fans didn't react that way, and that the fans reacted exactly as you would have hoped they would. They were respectful of the guy, I think, not just because of the words he was delivering, but because they felt everything he was saying was real. Everything he said in this segment, he came from the heart. It was his heartfelt feelings. He meant every word of it. Again, it's taking elements of Shoot and kind of incorporating it into the storyline here. So I can't say enough good things about this promo that Gunner has done very little recently that, you know, impresses me. There's nothing about Gunner to me aside from his tattoos that really stands out. He's a big guy, obviously. This stood out to me. This made me open up my eyes about Gunner. And we'll see, you know, he's got that briefcase. So at some point he's going to get a title shot. I don't think they would put the world title on him. But you never know. You know, maybe he holds on to it another 4 or 5 months and cashes in the summer, and they build to Gunner as the next big baby face in the company, especially if more people end up leaving TNA. At some point, they're going to have no choice but to go to their own homegrown talent like they're doing right now with Magnus and people like EC3 and Spud, and to put these guys at the top, you know, to put these guys in more prominent positions on the show. I still don't buy Gunner as the top baby face in the company, but 4 months from now, if they play their cards right, maybe I will. So this was really good stuff. Bad Influence came out to interrupt, cut a promo, made fun of them. I think, what was the insult that Kaz used? He called Monkey Fart, I think. I didn't like that, just because I didn't like it when The Rock does that, when he calls people like popcorn fart. That's just, it's not funny. It's stupid. It's stupid, lazy writing. So I don't know. I didn't really like that. I've seen better from these guys. They had a match. They agreed, Gunner did, to put his briefcase on the line in the match, to where if his team lost, I guess either Daniels or Kazarian, whoever got the pin, would get the briefcase. I hate that. I hate that so much. Like, you worked for this briefcase. This dodo brain comes out and hurls, you know, fifth grade insults at you, and he tells you what he wants you to do, and you just agree and go along with it and put your freaking briefcase on the line. Why would you do that? At least grab the microphone and say no, and then hit him in the face and wrestle him anyway. So stuff like that just irks me. But Storm and Gunner win the match. Seemingly all is well for now. I don't think that'll last, but we'll see. We had Bobby Roode barging into Dixie's office backstage. He revealed that Dixie promised him a title shot after all of his help screwing over AJ and Sting. She can't deal with him right now. She pulls out her checkbook. He says, "I don't want your money. I'm giving you 1 week to figure things out and give me what I want, which is a shot at the TNA World Heavyweight title. In the meantime," Roode tells her, "no more favors from me. You can forget about me coming out to help in the main event tonight." And he walks off. Bobby Roode is great. Rockstar Spud came out, called out the Wolves. Davey Richards and Eddie Edwards, who were there, they arrived in like an SUV or something. It wasn't even like a stretch limo. I guess they couldn't afford the limo. So I guess they arrived with the investor who was still in the vehicle. Nobody knew who it was. The Wolves come in. Spud is questioning them. He's getting up in their grill. He wants to know who the investor is. He's insulting them. He had one funny line. He says, "You know, I've been to America, or I've been in America now for a while, and I've seen cop shows like Magnum TA, so I know how this works," and I laughed at that. So he tried, and he slapped, I think it was Richards. Who, by the way, Davey Richards, same size as Rockstar Spud. Maybe half an inch taller, maybe. So he slaps Richards. The Wolves then look at each other. They take their jackets off slowly, roll up their sleeves, and they beat the crap out of Spud. And they leave him laying. I like this new gimmick with the Wolves. They're like hired hitmen here. They come out. They look like a couple of badasses. Even though, you know, again, Davey Richards is the same size as Rockstar Spud. Of course, he's got more talent than Rockstar Spud has in his pinky finger. Rockstar Spud plays Rockstar Spud very well. Rockstar Spud as a wrestler, I can't think that he or TNA, even though he did win British Boot Camp, and they didn't know what they were going to do with him, they weren't even using him for a while, I can't help but think there's no way either one of them thought he was really going to be anything as a wrestler. You know, and I know it sounds like a horrible thing to say, "Oh, this guy's too small to be anything," because a lot of times you hear that. People say that about Brian. They've said that years ago about Benoit and Eddie, but this is different. This guy is like pint size. In this role, he's great. I can't imagine that anybody ever at any point would have thought that this guy could be taken seriously as a wrestler in TNA or anywhere else. But he found his niche. So anyway, they laid him out. Bromans against Abyss and Eric Young. Abyss could not control himself. He delivered shock treatment to the referee, which resulted in the disqualification. So they did not win the tag team titles. There was some dissension between he and Eric Young when the match was over. He walked off, and Eric Young got on the microphone and said, "We have one experiment left, and that is you and I one-on-one in a Monsters Ball match." So there's going to be a Monsters Ball between them next week. I don't know if... I don't even know anymore. I'm done trying to guess if they're going to finally blow off this angle. You know, Abyss and Joe Park. It looked like they had already blown it off weeks ago, and then they just went right back to having Joseph Park coming out. I like Joseph Park, but for fuck's sake, just figure out what you're going to do. I mean, this has gone on way too long. This is another one of those things. It's all part of the plan. I don't see anybody really arguing that for TNA in this case. I hear people saying that about, you know, Daniel Bryan and WWE, and they're full of shit. But here, I don't know of anybody who disagrees with me when I say this thing is dragged on for way too long. So whatever the hell they're going to do, do it. Maybe they'll do it at the next tapings. Samuel Shaw. Here's another one of those new TNA characters who I happen to be intrigued by. I think it's too early for me to make a real judgment on where this is going to go or how successful he may be, because we've seen him wrestle a grand total of one match, a squash match, on TNA television. And here, this was kind of a wacky segment here, because he was on a date with Christy Hemme. Christy Hemme was there at the Impact taping. She was doing the ring announcing. I don't know if they show these segments. If anybody was at the Impact taping in Glasgow, maybe you could tell me. Did they show you the backstage vignettes up on the Titantron? I don't know if they do or not. At this point, though, it's ridiculous. When they do these segments, and Christy is just none the wiser. You know what? Even if they don't show the segments live during the taping, it's hard to suspend your disbelief when we see him doing, like in this segment, for example. they're together in his apartment. She's observing, oh, there's a very nice place you have here. And at one point, he goes into a back room. I don't know if it was his, I don't think it was his bedroom. It was like a, it was a shrine. He basically built a shrine to Christy Hemme, pictures of her up all over the place. There's a mannequin with a red wig that I guess is supposed to be a reasonable facsimile of her. A lot of really creepy shit, the kind of stuff you would see in like a horror movie or something, okay? That's great. I don't know, as a wrestler, where this leads, but just for the story they're telling, how the hell does this woman not realize at this point that this guy is fucking crazy? I mean, unless Impact goes on the air next week and we see Christy Hemme and she's all freaked out because she saw, you know, when the show is over, people tweeted her and texted her and told her, you got to watch Impact, and she saw it, and now she's completely freaked out by the guy and he's got to try to win her back. Like, that I can understand. Every single week, this woman comes out, she's none the wiser. She doesn't even watch her own television show. It's hard to suspend your disbelief. But, yeah, guy's a creep. Bully Ray came out with a casket. This was to build up to a challenge for a casket match between he and Mr. Anderson. And Anderson came out. They had a face-off over the casket. Anderson said, you know, I wonder what'll happen when coffin match is over. And Ray said that, again, he threatened to pile drive Ken Anderson's wife and kids. He said he would love to pile drive Anderson's wife. And Anderson said his wife and kids say hi, smashed Bully Ray's face against the casket lid. They brawled a little bit. He gave him the, what's that that forward roll that Anderson does? I don't remember the name of it, but he went to go lay him out with a chair shot. Ray bailed at that point, so this all builds to a casket match between the two of them. We had a backstage segment with Magnus and EC3. They've been building tension between Magnus and EC3. I've noticed that. There's a lot of underlying tension between the two of them. Magnus thinking this guy's green, he's entitled, you're not good enough. And at some point, this will bubble over. So this was to build some more tension between the two of them. Magnus was not exactly happy about having to team with a rookie. EC3 could take no more. He was about to lace into Magnus when Aunt Dixie walked in. And so the two of them pretended like everything was all hunky-dory. And they went about their merry way. Main event, Samoa Joe, Kurt Angle beat Magnus in EC3. Joe made Magnus tap out to the Coquina Clutch. So Samoa Joe is the number one contender for the TNA World Heavyweight title. I believe he gets the title shot against Magnus at Lockdown, which is a pay-per-view. It's their first pay-per-view since Bound for Glory. That'll be coming up, I think it's March 9th, whatever that Sunday is, the end of the first week in March. Dixie comes out. Obviously, she's very upset that Magnus lost. Joe got on the microphone, told Magnus to shine that belt up because Joe's gonna kill you. At this point, the Wolves came out, they stood on stage, and out came the Investor, who was in fact MVP. MVP, who never got above the level of Intercontinental U.S. title. He was a U.S. champion a few times in WWE. And he's one of those guys, you could say they could have done more with him, but I watched this. Here's why I didn't like this. Maybe MVP will turn out to be just fine. I'm not passing judgment on how he'll be in the role. MVP may turn out to be great in this role. What I didn't like here was they waited until the last 15 seconds of the show. Okay, now, it was a decent enough cliffhanger. I'm sure that's what they were going for. They waited until the last 15 minutes of the show. They built this thing up last week. They built this thing up all the whole episode this week. Out come the Wolves, they stand there, and it's MVP. And on commentary, Mike Tenay starts flipping out. I wish I had the audio. I should have pulled the audio. But he's on commentary going, it's MVP! Like, calm down, dude. Like, seriously, calm down, okay? And it bothers me because MVP was never a big star. Like, if this guy came out on stage and it was CM Punk, if CM Punk jumped ship to TNA, which is not happening, so don't ask me. But if CM Punk jumped ship to TNA and CM Punk came out as the new Investor, okay, fine. If everybody had a freak out, it would be understandable and the place would be going nuts and I'd have no problem with it. MVP was mid-card at best in WWE. And as is the case whenever TNA brings over a guy from WWE, They jizz their pants. They go crazy. They roll out the red carpet like they're the greatest thing in the world. And more often than not, it doesn't turn out well for them. Some guys do. Kurt Angle did. Okay, so some guys it works out. A lot of guys it doesn't. But from a matter of perception, perception is everything, right? This guy was a mid-carder in WWE. And you built up to this guy, and he comes out, and you got Mike Tenay on commentary freaking out like he's fucking Luthez. And it just, I don't know, it just rang hollow to me. And it's one of the problems that TNA has, where they need to focus more on their guys. Don't put the spotlight so much on the ex-WWE guys, because they're ex-WWE guys. I mean, that's part of the problem here. They say, oh, it's MVP. Like, everybody is supposed to know who MVP is, because they assume that every single person that watches their show is a WWE fan first. You can't have that mentality. You can't. You know, when they debuted the Wolves, they made comments, oh, this is one of the greatest, you know, free agent tag teams out there on the market right now, and the Wolves were a big team in Ring of Honor. Okay, and that's fine, because they are. They're very talented. They were stars in Ring of Honor, but it's not like everybody freaked out. I mean, if anything, when they came in, they had Dixie Carter treating them like they were freaking prelim guys. But it bothers me. You know, MVP was a freaking mid-card guy at best in WWE, who hasn't even been seen in years. Last time he was on WWE was probably, what, 2009, 2010? But Mike Tenay is on call. Oh, it's MVP! Oh, my God! Let's just give him the world title while we're at it. It's like, calm down. I can only imagine if Chris Masters and Carlito ever come to TNA, Mike Tenay's going to have to be wheeled around with a frickin' oxygen tank. Kurt Angle has been inducted into the TNA Wrestling Hall of Fame much earlier than expected. The news broke right after I recorded last week's show and talked about how embarrassing it could be for TNA if Kurt were to leave when his contract expires this summer before they have a chance to induct him as part of Bound for Glory weekend, which is traditionally when they've done the Hall of Fame inductions. Instead, he was inducted on Saturday in a ceremony at Wembley Arena in London. Kurt appeared on a UK TV show last weekend and admitted that his left hand is completely numb. So not a tingling or anything like that. Total numbness in his left hand. Yeah. Keep doing those moonsaults off the cage. Reports from people on the European tour were that he was in real bad shape. He only did a run-in the first night of the tour because he couldn't wrestle. He looked fine on Impact, but I would not read too much into that. I think anytime the guy's on TV, if he's on camera, he's probably going to have his A-game on. It's when he's, you know, walking back through the curtain, I guess, that you probably have to worry more about the guy. But, you know, in these interviews, he's done a few of them now. He's talked about wanting to have matches with Triple H, with CM Punk, with Daniel Bryan. I got news for you. If he does go back there when his contract expires, he's not wrestling a match for WWE. It's not happening. When he leaves TNA, unless he decides to do indies, and I can't picture Kurt Angle doing indies, unless it's some kind of special show here and there, his in-ring career is over. He's delusional if he thinks otherwise. So the decision for Kurt when his contract comes due may be a matter of, do I want to wrestle again or not? That's really what the decision is going to be. Because if he re-signs with TNA, I mean, shit, they'll let him wrestle. They'll let him wrestle until he breaks his neck in the ring. But if he goes to WWE, he's not wrestling. Time for the mailbag. If you have questions, you can email them to me, thesolemonster@gmail.com is the email address. Please include your name and where you are from. And if you want to send MP3 questions, possibly to be played here on the Sound Off, you can attach them. MP3 format only. Try to keep them brief. Ryan in Scotland is up first. I know it's pretty much set in stone that Daniel Bryan will take on Sheamus at WrestleMania 30. Well, guess nothing's ever really set in stone, as we can see. Ryan sent this question in before the Rumble and before Punk left. But he says, what do you think of them having a Money in the Bank match at WrestleMania since there is now only one title? Daniel Bryan makes a shock appearance in the match, wins the briefcase, then just before the bell is about to ring in the main event, between Orton and Batista, out comes Bryan to a massive pop. He cashes in the briefcase to make it a triple threat for the title, and then beats both men to become WWE champion, and WrestleMania ends with 75,000 people chanting yes. I know I'm just clutching at straws with this idea, but would love to see him get his WrestleMania moment and become the champion. It would be a very cool moment, but, you know, after dragging this out for so long, unless Bryan specifically announces before the pay-per-view, I am going to cash in that night, I think it's crazy not to promote him as being in the title match in advance. And I mean, they're not doing a Money in the Bank match, okay? Because they're keeping their pay-per-view, so it's not even a possibility, okay? There's no ladder match. There's no Money in the Bank match. And I like the idea of him announcing it in advance, his participation in the championship match, if he's going to be in it, if it is going to be a three-way. You can't announce it on the pay-per-view. You can't have him come out right before and not even promote it in advance. I mean, that's just, it's crazy. Terry from Seaham, England. I don't know if you heard or not, but WWE has renewed its deal with Sky Sports for 5 years, starting in 2015. As part of the deal, not only will they air Raw, SmackDown, Main Event, and Experience, but they will air all pay-per-views for the normal cost of just having Sky Sports. This is along with the WWE Network spell the end for pay-per-views in the world of wrestling. My understanding is that all 12 pay-per-views are going to be airing on Sky Box Office, not Sky Sports or whatever the regular channel is. So no, you will still have to pay for the pay-per-views. If anything, and the UK folks can chime in on this and correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe a handful of those pay-per-views would sometimes air for free on Sky, and that will no longer be the case. All pay-per-views will be airing on Sky Box Office. How much WWE is going to charge for them, that I don't know. If they're launching the network there next year and charging $9.95 US, I don't know why Sky would agree to a deal where their pay-per-views would cost more than that, you know, what would cost more than what WWE would charge on their own network. Because why then would people buy the pay-per-views on Sky Box Office? So that's going to be a question that has to be answered. The Hollywood Reporter did a story about this. They claim the deal between Sky and WWE is believed to be at least three times what their last deal was for. So I'm sure that's what WWE is hoping to get at NBC Universal, too. We'll know soon enough if they get their rights fees increased that they're looking for. It's looking pretty good for them right now, but you never know with these things. I'm sure NBC would love to keep them. They want to stay with NBC. Does NBC like them enough to double or triple what they were making? I don't see them tripling. Doubling, maybe. I think they could definitely pull that off. Devin wants to know what I think of this. He says, I'm looking at The Shield and the Wyatt family, and I say to myself, I know the Wyatts are locked in for a while, but The Shield might split soon. And I look at Sheamus and I ask, what can we do with him? I don't want him in the main event just yet, so I was wondering if it would be a good idea to have Sheamus join the Real Americans and have some feuds with The Shield and the Wyatts, more so to give The Shield something besides having seeds of doubt planted and having them split too early. The Shield's splitting up. It's not a matter of if at this point, it's a matter of when. And I think they should do it either at WrestleMania or the night after on Raw in front of that wild crowd. Reigns will be over like crazy if they do that. I actually feel just the opposite of what you do. I'd rather see Sheamus feuding with Antonio Cesaro. I think there's way more upside to Cesaro as a singles guy than Swagger. You know, the two could feud, and you could even end up doing a double turn at some point a few months down the road. You know, with Punk gone, it opens up a hole on the babyface side. So I wouldn't turn Sheamus just yet. I mean, before, I figured when Sheamus comes back, he's a heel. Comes back as a heel and goes after Bryan. If Bryan had the belt, obviously Bryan doesn't have the belt. They were thinking of doing him and Sheamus anyway, face versus face at WrestleMania. But if Punk is gone and if Punk's not coming back or not coming back for a while, you kind of need to keep Sheamus face for now because there is that hole, but I would rather see him as a heel again. So give it a few months and then turn him. Turn him and Cesaro at the same time. Brandon from Baltimore, why the heck didn't John Cena ever acknowledge that The Rock screwed him out of the title at WrestleMania in 2011? Never once during Once in a Lifetime or Twice in a Lifetime did this ever come up. Wouldn't this have been seen as true motivation for fighting The Rock? Well, blame the writers. It's their job to make stuff like that part of the story. I agree with you. But this is par for the course with John Cena. Nothing ever phases his character. His father was beaten and hospitalized by Randy Orton, and at the Royal Rumble, you never would have known. Never would have known. Cool as a cucumber. He just locks up with Orton like any other wrestling match. No sense of urgency, no sense of revenge. You know, back on TV the next night smiling. It's hard to care about any stories involving Cena because nothing matters to the guy. If they did a storyline where Batista banged Nikki Bella, I can picture him coming out for the match, looking into the camera all calmly, and just going, you know, hey, Stu! Stu, you ready, Stu? How's the wife and kids? Good? All right, Stu, time to go to work. I hope one day Stu the cameraman just waffles him over the head with that fucking camera. Romit writes in, I still do not get the Miz phenomenon. For 3 years between 2008 and 2010, I was only watching WWE pay-per-views, no TV shows until the Punk pipe bomb. I was always surprised seeing Miz booked well on pay-per-views, but I don't get it. How did he make it into the WrestleMania main event? I know you've said before all they needed was a body in there, but there were so many better guys. Why do you think Miz was selected? Was it just because he was good with media work? Because his in-ring work sucked back then? And here is the main question. By having Miz in the main event of WrestleMania, and then 3 years later, Miz is a nobody and booked like a jobber, don't you think that they have undermined how hard it is to get to the WrestleMania main event, with people now thinking, hey, the Miz could do it, so why not me? Yeah, I mean, there were more talented guys who could have gotten that spot. I think that was, what, 2011 that he got that? I've talked about that before. Wade Barrett. I mean, for God's sakes, they had the Cena-Wade Barrett feud, which they had a pay-per-view match. Barrett won because some NXT guys interfered. So Cena had to be the Nexus slave, remember, for like a month or two. So Barrett was being prominently featured, but then they just, you know, did nothing with him. I mean, he wrestled Randy Orton for the title. He lost. They had a rematch on Raw and he lost. That was the night that Miz cashed in and became champion. So as Barrett went one way, Miz went the other. And they went with Miz instead. I mean, Miz, I don't know. I don't know what the thought process was, why it had to be Miz. If they really did have high hopes for the guy and it just didn't pan out, and so they ended up kind of de-pushing him, or if they liked how he was with the media, because he's very good at that. You know, the Miz is very affable. He can, you know, make the media rounds, and he's like the puppet with the pull string. He'll say what you want him to say. He's like a robot. That's why I hate the Miz on commentary, because there's nothing real. There's nothing genuine about the Miz on commentary. Wade Barrett, though, is the name that comes to mind. As a match and as a feud, would have been at least a little bit more believable. Barrett was still relatively a rookie at that point. I still think it would have been way too early for him to be in a Mania main event. But, I mean, certainly if they were looking for somebody to put in there as a body, like a newer guy or a younger guy, I would have gone with Barrett over Miz. I wouldn't say Miz sucks either as a wrestler. I mean, Miz at one point wasn't very good. He has gotten a lot better. I mean, Miz now compared to Miz, you know, 5 years ago, night and day. So I won't knock him for that, but I agree. And even beyond Barrett, I don't have the 2011 roster in front of my face right now, so I don't know all the different guys who were down, you know, toiling in the mid-card who could have been a better choice. But Barrett's the one that comes to mind. I mean, Miz won Money in the Bank in 2010 and a couple of championships. I'm not really sure how far in advance they decided that he was going to be the one to face John Cena. Miz at the time was a good heel. You know, he had improved his look. He used to wear, like, the long pants, and he went to tights. He got his body in shape. He wasn't bad. He wasn't bad at all. He had that TLC match with Lawler on Raw. He did some good stuff. He won at WrestleMania, but it meant nothing. So to go to your original point, does it undermine the Mania main event? It does, because this guy won at WrestleMania, and the next month, Cena got the belt back. And like you said, look at him now. But you know what? They were pushing Miz for much of the year before that. He won the U.S. Championship. I think he won the Intercontinental title. He won Money in the Bank. He was a tag team champion. Then he won the WWE title, and he was a fresh face in the main event, a younger guy. He just wasn't ready to be put in that position. Marcel from Indiana, what is the latest on Sting and WWE? If he signs with them, how would you use him to build to WrestleMania 30? Here is the update on Sting, and this actually comes from the Figure 4 newsletter, which went up at the end of the week. Latest update is that Sting has not yet signed with WWE, but is expected to. It's almost a foregone conclusion that he'll sign some kind of deal, whether it's a Legends deal or an actual wrestler contract, that I don't know. But he's probably coming in, and it sounds like the role for him may be Raw General Manager, which I could see. I could see that, and I'd be okay with that. I would let him make a debut cameo, though, at WrestleMania, instead of just, you know, putting him on Raw as the new GM 1 week. Like, I could see them doing that maybe even on Raw the night after the Elimination Chamber. Get Brad Maddox bounced out of there, and I don't know if the authority would install him. I don't know what the logic behind how he becomes the GM, if that's the direction you go in. I'm sure they're going to want to make that Raw on the 24th, the special one, because that's the night the network launches. They want all eyes on that show. So don't be surprised if Hulk Hogan pops up that night for the first time. Sting could very well pop up as well. But I would let him make a debut cameo at WrestleMania. I would hate not to announce him for the show in advance if you've already got him signed, but we get so few of those shock moments. And if he's not wrestling, and Sting may not wrestle at WrestleMania this year. It is not a foregone conclusion that Sting, if he comes in, is going to have a match at WrestleMania 30. He's not wrestling The Undertaker. Undertaker and Brock is the match. I would be very surprised at this late stage if they change their mind on that. And look, anything's possible. Anything can happen. But I would be shocked. So he's not wrestling Undertaker. If they do Undertaker and Brock, why not do a deal where they're having a match, Brock kicks out of the tombstone. Undertaker, no matter what he does, can't put him away. He's too big, he's too mean, Undertaker's too old. So suddenly there's doubt, he can't do it, the streak may end. Brock is just destroying him now. Like he did Big Show. He's got a chair. He's laying into him with chair shots, provided that it's a no DQ match. I think all Brock Lesnar matches should be no DQ, by the way. So he's about to finish him off, and that's when the lights go out. And when the lights, and you let it simmer for a little bit, and when the lights come back on, there's Sting in his face paint, trench coat, baseball bat in hand. Because that's the only way Sting's ever going to beat up Brock Lesnar is with the help of a baseball bat. So he gets a few shots in on Brock with the bat. Brock stumbles, maybe into another tombstone. 1, 2, 3. Undertaker wins. The streak survives another year. And then after the match, you could have this tense stare down between the two of them. Sting still has the bat in hand. But instead of using it, he extends his hand. Undertaker accepts. And Sting leaves and lets Undertaker celebrate. And if you want to use that as the impetus for an eventual Sting-Undertaker match, fine. I just don't think it's happening at this point. I don't think it's happening this year. I don't think it's happening next year. I know some people are just never going to let that dream go. They're going to harp on it. And I guarantee you, I call it right now, if Sting comes into WWE to do anything other than face The Undertaker, if he comes in as the Raw GM, you're going to have a ton of people, oh, I'm so disappointed. WWE is so stupid. They suck. Why wouldn't they give us The Undertaker match? Well, because Undertaker's got plans, and Undertaker is old. And so is Sting. Sting can go at the right opponent. I wouldn't hate on a Sting-Undertaker match. It would certainly be a big-time match. But I'm not going to hate on WWE if they don't make it. But you'll have a ton of people complaining. I can hear them now. I can already hear the complaints. And it hasn't even happened yet. But that's one idea that you could do where it would get people excited. It would be some interaction between Undertaker and Sting. Undertaker only comes around for WrestleMania, so when the hell else are you going to do an angle with them? It would have to be a WrestleMania. There was actually talk when Sting was in discussions with WWE. He's been in discussions with them a few times. He was in discussions with them before WrestleMania 19 in 2003. That was when they did the Rock-Steve Austin match. I think Rock may have made the pitch for Sting to come in as an opponent for him, which maybe it would have been Sting instead of Goldberg. I don't recall that specifically, but I do remember them being in discussions with Sting. There were talks between them. They came kind of close on a deal. Something happened. It didn't work out. But there was talk that he might make an appearance at WrestleMania, right? And that was over a decade ago. So the idea that Sting would make a debut cameo at WrestleMania, you don't need to promote him in advance. People aren't going to buy or sell WrestleMania based on Sting unless he's in a match. If he's not in a match, then it's not a big deal. You can debut him there, and it would make for a cool moment, I think, at the end of the Undertaker match. Finally, Cole from Philadelphia. So Christian qualifies for the Elimination Chamber match by defeating Jack Swagger with an okay-looking frog splash. My question to you is, who had the best-looking frog splash? RVD, Eddie Guerrero, D'Lo Brown, or Love Machine Art Barr? Well, Art Barr was the innovator of that move. I did not see him use it too often because I did not see much of Art Barr, I admit. Much of what I've seen of Art Barr came much later on, watching old matches and stuff. And you know, the matches with him and Eddie Guerrero when they were a tag team, and their big match at When Worlds Collide. A lot of the stuff that you guys, I'm sure, have probably seen. But he definitely had one of the best frog splashes. I would say second best. Number one, it's got to be RVD. Nobody gets higher than Rob Van Dam on that move. He can do it from anywhere. He gets the height. He gets the distance. And when he lands, he bounces off his opponent. There's a lot of things that RVD does very well. RVD can take a move very well. I've never seen anybody take a DDT better than Rob Van Dam. If anything, maybe he oversells the shit out of it, but it's fucking great, you know? The frog splash is just a thing of beauty. So, hands down, RVD.
History has been made here!
This week in wrestling history, 22 years ago this week, January 27, 1992... WWE taped its second-to-last edition of Saturday Night's Main Event of that era. The show would not be resurrected until 2006, so that's a pretty big gap right there. I believe this was the first episode to air on Fox. NBC had been the show's previous home. Show didn't air until February 8th, and it is a memorable one. That was the one where Sid tagged with Hulk against Ric Flair and The Undertaker, and Sid bailed on Hogan mid-match, setting up their WrestleMania 8 match. Hogan vs. Flair had already been announced on television, but was never actually supposed to happen. Sid vs. Hogan was the plan all along. This show also featured the way-too-early blow-off to the feud between Macho Man Randy Savage and Jake the Snake Roberts. Savage beat him clean with the elbow drop, and then afterwards, Jake was waiting backstage for Savage and Miss Elizabeth to come through the curtain. He was going to blast the first person he saw with a steel chair. But before he could do it, The Undertaker grabbed the chair, stopped Jake from doing the dastardly deed, effectively turning babyface, which Undertaker would remain until 1998. I don't think they actually showed that footage until the syndicated shows that weekend. It was like, off-the-air exclusive footage when the show was over. They even had Vince and Bobby Heenan still on headset, acting like they were off the air. Vince actually had one funny line where he told Heenan, "I thought that was your worst performance yet." You know, thinking they were, quote, off the air. So that was 22 years ago this week. 21 years ago this week, on January 27, 1993, Andre the Giant died in his sleep from heart failure in a hotel room in Paris, France. He had been there for his father's funeral. He was only 46 at the time of his death. Shortly thereafter, he became the first inductee into the WWE Hall of Fame. Andre had acromegaly, which is a condition where a tumor on the pituitary gland produces way too much growth hormone. That's what caused his giantism. And unfortunately, giants do not live very long, at least those who do not have the condition taken care of, which Andre never did. Big Show, for example, had the same condition, but his tumor, I think he had his tumor removed when he was in his late teens. Andre wrestled his first match in WWE in 1972, wrestled his last match, the last match of his career, 20 years later in 1992, only a month before his death in All Japan. Near the end of his career, he did a bunch of matches tagging with Giant Baba. His final television appearance in the U.S. was actually on a WCW show, of all places, not a WWE show. He did an interview on their Clash of the Champions special in 92. And Andre also had a great role in one of my favorite movies, The Princess Bride. Andre was great in that movie. It's too bad that we couldn't see him in more films. 14 years ago this week, on January 31st, 2000, the Radicals shocked the world by making their debut on Monday Night Raw together as a group. Chris Benoit, who had just won the WCW title at their most recent pay-per-view, Eddie Guerrero, Dean Malenko, and Perry Saturn all made the jump from WCW and popped up in the front row during a New Age Outlaws tag team match. 14 years later, they're the tag team champions of the world. So anyway, they ended up interfering and laying waste to the Outlaws 14 years ago this week. 9 years ago this week, on January 30th, 2005, Batista won the Royal Rumble match, entering at number 28. Oh, wait. Those are my notes from last Sunday. Nope. Batista actually also entered the Royal Rumble at number 28 in 2005, if you can believe it, and won the whole thing. He eliminated John Cena to win the match, but only after the two of them fell out of the ring and hit the floor at the exact same time. The old Lex Luger Bret Hart finish from 1994. The finish may have been botched, I'm not entirely sure. Vince McMahon ran down to the ring, mad as hell, threw his jacket down, And as he slid into the ring, he hit his knee on the apron and tore his quad. He tried to stand up. He immediately fell down on his ass, which is where he stayed, as the referees each pleaded their case for who they thought won the match. You know, what's worse is that, I guess because, you know, the almighty Vince McMahon can't show weakness in front of other people, he insisted on walking to the back on his own power. And in doing so, he tore his other quad as well. Oops. This is what he told the Wall Street Journal in an interview shortly thereafter. He said, 7 weeks ago, I severed both of my quadriceps tendons doing a stunt in the ring. I wasn't warmed up, I didn't stretch, and that, unfortunately, is major surgery. His stunt was running into the ring. Anyway, they restarted the match, and Batista tossed out John Cena for the win. 3 years ago this week, on January 30th, 2011, Alberto Del Rio was the winner of the largest Royal Rumble of all time, 40 men, instead of the usual 30. They had a great false finish at the end with Del Rio and Santino Marella, of all people. People badly wanted Santino to win, but not to be. This was the Rumble where Booker T made his return to WWE after his stint in TNA, and Kevin Nash, reprising his Big Daddy Cool Diesel gimmick for the first time since 1996, entered at number 32 and got a massive reaction. Diesel was way more over than Kevin Nash was at this year's Rumble. And no, I don't think they should bring back the 40-man Rumble. It's just fine the way it is. 30 guys, 90-second intervals. And finally, 1 year ago this week, on January 27th, 2013, The Rock beat CM Punk to become WWE Champion for the eighth time. Beat him with the People's Elbow. Kind of underwhelming, given that CM Punk had been champion for 434 days, nobody could beat him, and it was The Rock with a elbow drop. But what are you going to do? So The Rock would go on to defend the title against Punk in a rematch the next month, beat him, and then lost the belt to John Cena at WrestleMania 29. So I say again, John Cena versus Bray Wyatt, WrestleMania 30, be grateful. Be grateful that John Cena is not wrestling for the championship. And that's this week in wrestling history. If you have mailbag questions, email them to me, thesolemonster@gmail.com. You know, I was starting to make some progress because I am so backlogged on questions. So please, if you've emailed me, do not be offended if I have not responded to you. I do still hope to at some point. I started making some progress this week, and then the Royal Rumble happened, and then CM Punk left. And every other email in my inbox now is asking me, is it a work? Is it not a work? What about this? What about that? So I've been set back like 6 weeks, probably in email. So just bear with me. But do send me questions, and I'll pluck out what I can. You never know if yours may get picked for the mailbag. Follow me on Twitter, @Solemonster. We are well over 4,400 followers and counting. So please follow me on there. I will be live tweeting, as always, during Raw this Monday night. And you can also friend me on Facebook. We have a profile page on there. We have a fan page that you can like. And, of course, we have the Solemonster Sounds Off discussion group on Facebook, which is a closed group. You have to apply for membership. But we are well over 1,100 members now. A lot of activity, a lot of good debate and discussion going on there. Of course, we had our Royal Rumble pool, which hopefully you were a part of. So hit us up on Facebook, the group, the profile, anywhere you see us. We want you to be part of that experience. And subscribe to our YouTube channel. My name is The Solemonster, all one word. That's my username on there. We have an official channel. You can subscribe to us. Sound Off extra episodes go up every now and then. I did watch the AJ Styles shoot interview that he did with High Spots called Making an Impact or Leaving an Impact, whatever it is. And took some notes as I watched in case I wanted to do a Sound Off extra, which I might. I can't guarantee anything. I might do that, so if you want to see the bonus episodes that go up there, there's some classic Sound Offs that can't be found anywhere else, the original episodes, the lost episodes. I think we have episodes 1 through 8 or 1 through 9 currently up on our YouTube channel, so head over there and check that out. Of course, you can stream this podcast each and every weekend on Stitcher Radio. You can subscribe to us in iTunes. You can download our free app in the Google Play Store if you have an Android device. You can make PayPal donations to the show on thesolemonster.com. All of those different things. Please do show your support for the show. We also have a Sound Off Superstore. at solomonster.spreadshirt.com. I am hoping to put up some new stuff very shortly, maybe even a sweatshirt or a hoodie or something for the winter weather, maybe with the Sound Off logo on it. But there's some good shirts up there now, logo shirts. There's a funny TNA shirt up there, some phone cases with the Sound Off logo on it. solomonster.spreadshirt.com. You'll find a link to it also on our main webpage. So do keep connected to the show. This is by far the longest normal episode I've ever recorded, which I figured it would be with all the news to cover. I think I've had one or two shows, like special shows, like my top 30 Raw moments that were a little bit longer, but if you made it through the full 2 hours plus, you are a braver person than I am. I'm recording this show, and I barely made it through. So we'll be back with episode 313 next week. I pray not as much news. No news is good news. Isn't that the expression? Isn't that what they say? We'll put that to the test this week. But we'll be back next week. And until then, be well. Stay safe. Thank you for your continued support of the show. Super Bowl this weekend. I got the Broncos. Broncos over the Seahawks. 24-21. That's my pick. You heard it here first on the Sound Off. My vote goes to Peyton Manning and that purple goblin on his forehead. You see that whenever he takes his helmet off? How tight must that helmet be? It looks like he's like got punched in the head every single time the game ends and he pulls that helmet off. So yeah, I'm voting for Peyton's forehead this weekend. Until next time, take care, guys.
You've been listening to the Solomonster Sounds Off, giving you the good.
Because I'm the man!
You don't shut your mouth, I am going to punch you in the face.
The bad.
You're going to prove to the world that all you are is a B-plus player.
And the ugly.
And then Hogan announces that he's going to defend the championship, Bully Ray is, against the same Sting who just 3 months ago lost a match where if he lost, he can never again get another title shot. What in the fuck just happened?
Well, mostly the good.
I can't get a break with Ace's name. I got to get rid of this mess. I got to get rid of this club. This club sucks.
Solomonster Sounds Off.
Since 2007, on the Solomonster.com, Stitcher Radio, and iTunes, the Solomonster Sounds Off.